build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little...
This is the Quality News Network. NATO's top commander has asked the 26 member nations for thousands of additional troops in Afghanistan, but none have made any offers. 18,500 troops are already stationed there, but that's reportedly still 15% less than full strength. Meanwhile, Operation Medusa, the biggest anti-Taliban offensive, is in its final stage. Today, coalition troops pushed further into Kandahar province. Dozens of rebels and eight policemen were killed elsewhere in the country today. The U.S. military has launched an investigation into the unauthorized release of a video to NBC News. It was purportedly taken from a U.S. drone aircraft and shows Taliban militants attending a funeral in Afghanistan. In Iraq, nearly 40 people were killed and more than 70 wounded in bombings and mortar shells targeting Iraqi police. Also, the bodies of 65 men, most of them showing signs of torture, have been found throughout Baghdad since yesterday. Also in Iraq, three more U.S. soldiers were killed in the last 24 hours, two in Anbar province, the other near Baghdad. In Montreal today, a gunman opened fire at a college campus, killing at least four. More than a dozen others were wounded, some of them critically. Police say they shot and killed at least one gunman, but will not confirm whether there was more than one. In Gaza today, the Palestinian cabinet resigned to make way for a new coalition government. It'll be made up of the militant group Hamas and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas's moderate Fatah party. However, the European Union says it will not restore full diplomatic and economic ties until Hamas renounces violence, recognizes Israel, and abides by previous peace deals. Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn says the military's non-lethal weapon should be tested on American citizens for crowd control. He says that way the U.S. is less likely to be criticized for using them in war. On Capitol Hill, the Senate-led Senate Judiciary Committee has endorsed legislation that would legalize the domestic spying program. The full Senate will address the issue next week. And in other Senate news, the Armed Services Committee is backing a bill that authorizes military tribunals for suspected terrorists. But it's not what President Bush wanted. The bill does not include provisions that opponents say violate human rights and basic tenets of American jurisprudence. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Scientists have announced a discovery of the most distant galaxy ever found. IOK-1 is 13 billion light years away and is thought to have come into being shortly after the Big Bang. A federal proposal would severely cut the critical habitat for a threatened seabird, the marbled murrelet, in Washington, Oregon, and California. Officials say the bird is already protected by other management plans. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson travels to China next week. He is expected to ask the Chinese to reform their economy more quickly, including making its currency more flexible. Former HealthSouth executive Mike Martin will serve 3 years in prison starting October 12th. A judge handed down the sentence for Martin's role in a nearly $3 billion fraud at the company. A top Saudi oil executive says only 18% of the global supply of crude oil has been tapped and is encouraging further exploration. His comments came during an OPEC meeting in Vienna. Nigerian oil unions started a three-day strike today in a bid for better security that comes amid scattered violence, including kidnappings and killings. And billionaire George Soros is giving $50 million to the UN to fight extreme poverty and AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa. Light sweet crude settled today at $64.12. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 45 points, NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Dang, it's good to be back here at the home studio. I enjoyed being on the road yesterday evening down at West Virginia State University. I think that was a very, very important forum on the people, the Constitution, and George Bush. But I got to admit, I'm happiest when I'm right here back behind the... that's definitely not a golden microphone. No, it's kind of a matte colored, and well, and there's probably some cigarette smoke dust around it somewhere. I got bad habits. Well, that's my vice. I'm working on it. That's all I can say. I'm working on it. But I'm glad to be back because there's just something, you know, there's something about being in your happy place. And this is my happy place. Mainly it's my happy place because I'm less than 3 feet away from the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Agnes. And that puts me greatly at ease. I know I'm safe here. If some weirdo right winger were to burst into the studio, the poor thing would be the hamburger before it even got half a chance.
My dog and my sword.
She's a killer. She's a killer, I'm telling you. But more than anything else, you know, this is Wednesday, and I haven't had a right and proper straight up. Well, you know what Wednesday's all about.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Dang tootin', it's prayer meeting night.
Hallelujah.
Yay! And I am Brother Bob coming to you from the Cathedral of Common Sense here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. And I'm so glad you could you could join us and share your time with us. I got six different ways from Sunday I can go with this beginning of this prayer. I mean, there's real news out there, and then there's stuff just to remind you that as our good friend Wayne has pointed out from time to time, it is only going to be uglier. It's going to get uglier and uglier and uglier as we progress. As we progress toward Election Day in November. These punks, these thugs, these monsters are scared half to death. They feel the power slipping through their fingers like sands through the hourglass. And they don't like it, and they resent it, and the idea that there would be some operation of democracy in this nation that would divest them of power is sickening and terrifying. Because, you know, what comes along with all of this is, you know, the perp walk. There could very well be indictments. So it's a frightening time to be a Republican right now. And when you're frightened, you're mean. And these are some terrified people. So, like I said, there's a lot of stuff for us to. But let's do the prayer meet. Let's get a prayer meeting story right out there. Let's go nigh unto my old stomping grounds, the land of my birth, if you will. Let's go to Athens, Alabama. I was first turned on to this story by our good friend, Rick in Panama City, Florida. I'm not gonna try to describe this to you. I'm gonna take it straight off the text because I couldn't do it any greater justice. Put your hands on the radio and feel the power flowing through you. A woman and two roommates are accused of holding her brother at gunpoint. Agnes, you haven't heard this one yet. A woman and two roommates are accused of holding her brother at gunpoint as she prayed for his repentance. Yea, verily, let the demons come out and the .357 Magnum load go in. Yeah. As she prayed for his repentance, even firing it. You're not going to leave, are you? You know, I pray harder for you than anybody else. You can't leave. Blam! No, even firing a shot into the ceiling to keep his attention. Sometimes Jesus has to put one over your head to get your attention, brother. Randy Doss is 46 years old. He lives in Athens, Alabama. He says he fled the house when his captors got distracted and later went to police, who were skeptical at first because, well, it seemed a little bit crazy. But they went to the house and they checked it out. And they found a freshly patched bullet hole in the ceiling.
Don't you just hate it when it's
oh, bad? Lord, Lord, Lord. We found where they patched the hole with caulk, said Sergeant Trevor Harris. Police said the sister, Tammy Lee Doss, 43, Donna Lee Bianca, 37, and Ronald David Ritchie, 45, who live at the Athens house, were charged with unlawful imprisonment, a misdemeanor. The two women were also charged with menacing, a misdemeanor, and all were released on bond. Yeah, I know, this is funny. But there's more to it than that. This has meaning. This is Bushmerica, okay? Because I got another story in the stack. Dear Leader's been out there opining. I believe it was the Washington Post today. Where the story was published. He said he sees a third great awakening in America. It's a third great awakening. It's a spiritual renewal. A lot of people look at the war on terror and they turn to their faith, as I do too, and they think it is a they think that this is a war about our. Be afraid. Be very afraid. What do we got, a telemarketer on the line, dear? Okay, I got to get that booth built sometime. Harris said Randy Doss went to the house about 7 p.m. on Labor Day.
Hey, it works out that way.
On Labor Day, and at some point got in an argument with the two women about religion. When they prayed for him, he laughed. They both got upset and pointed pistols at him, Harris said. They wouldn't let him leave. Bianca fired one round in the ceiling in the hallway a few feet from the victim's head. Jesus doesn't want you to leave. He said the women tried to get Doss to admit things he did as a child. I once said bugger. She claims the brother wronged her years ago when they were kids, and she just got the truth out of him and apparently wanted revenge. He says they would not let him go. The sister says she was just trying to scare her brother. The three suspects denied they held Doss against his will. They also denied having fired a warning shot over his head, but like I said, there was a bullet hole. again, funny little story. Oh, those crazy religious rednecks, what are they going to do next? Funny, nah, not so much. Because, you see, this isn't an isolated incident. How many other stories are there that center on this kind of the religious insanity? And I am not by any stretch of the imagination gooning on anybody for what they may believe or not believe. It's your right. It's your business. I don't care. But what I am trying to get across here is that we live in a dangerous culture. And I'm not talking about dangerous because of guns. I'm talking about dangerous because of psychotic religious insanity. I mean, I know that these people are in church every time. These crazy people who point guns and believe in Jesus or die. They go to church every Sunday. And they listen to probably a semi-educated, half-educated, barely literate person who says, oh, I'm a preacher because somebody I was ordained by God. By God, I was ordained. They listen to that kind of garbage, and they go out and they act on it. I remember when it used to be that you shouldn't let your children watch those wicked Bugs Bunny cartoons because the next thing you know, they'll be dropping pianos out of buildings. But I'm sane, and the kids I grew up with were sane, and we were able to clearly delineate between reality and fantasy and animation and real life. These goobers can't. And so when Jerry Falwell says, America will go to hell and not be blessed by God unless we kill all the Homer sectionals, they believe it. And they yearn for the, you know, Christian Reconstructionism. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Christian Dominionism. They want to kill people. Really, really, really kill people. So, you know, that we begin in Athens. We begin with gunshots over people's heads. Stop and pray, brother. Or the Lord might not stay my hand next time. It's where we begin, and but the thing is, it's where we begin. But to be quite honest, that's just a starting place. It gets crazier. It's going to get crazier as the night goes out. It's going to get crazier as we get nearer November. Because the fiends and the freaks and the ghouls are in the streets on the other side. And all we have to protect ourselves is each other. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I don't mean a big reduction in the price of beer. But all the people that you mean your image, see them starving on their feet. Because they don't get enough to eat from God.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered. I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
This is, isn't it? Shade, blankets, wine, bread, cheese. And we ask questions. This is a good place for asking questions, this little network we've got, this little Head On Radio network. Real questions, like... Like, for instance, you're not really behind a couple of people who put bullet holes in ceilings shooting over people's heads and praying over. That's not you, right?
Oh, no, that's not me.
No. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Robert calling from Japan. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you again.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well. Yourself?
Pretty good. Your story kind of reminded me of another story that I had heard a few years ago. About Chris Aquino in the Philippines, the daughter of the famous former president.
Yes, Corazon Aquino's,
Right. So she had this hankering, this lust for this married man that had children or something, and she just had to have sex with him. So the president was very, very concerned about this, and she thought, well, the daughter's got the fornication demon in her, and the only way to get the fornication demon out of her was to get her locked into a room with the cardinal at the time, whose name was Cardinal Sin.
Cardinal sin.
Just not making this up. He's Chinese, Filipino.
Yeah, yeah.
Notorious man in terms of, you know, messing up politics over there. And locked her up in the room and had the cardinal pray with her and pray for her all night. And then the next day she was let out, and she went out and had sex with a guy and had her first child, or her only child, with him. And it's not the first time she did. I mean, she did this again with a mayor, and that time she got a sexually transmitted disease, and that was all over the networks for at least a month. But it goes to show you that if you locked up your daughter with a guy named Cardinal Sin to get the fornicating demon out of her, it's not going to work.
Well, you know, it's presupposing demons, Robert, so, you know.
Once they're there, they're there, I suppose. But whatever you do, you know, stay away from people with sin, who names like sin, I suppose.
Or, you know, loaded handguns who swear that they're doing it in the name of Jesus.
Exactly right.
The dangerous people out there right now, Robert.
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah. Anyway, I was in the Philippines last month for about a week, part of my deacon training business, and I was in a seminary, which is very similar to a monastery, you know, for training, seminarian. Mm-hmm. Have you been in such a place?
I have visited one in Georgia once upon a time.
Okay.
Yeah, a monastery, a Trappist monastery, yes.
Oh, okay. Pretty interesting places.
Oh, fascinating.
Yes. So I was there for a week, and I had, you know, some study, and I ate with seminarians. There were about 40 or 50 of them, which was quite amazing. This is, of course, an Anglican one. And my impression when I flew over the Philippines, and some of this is kind of relevant to the United States, so that's why I'm kind of mentioning it.
Okay.
Was that when I flew over the Manila, the first thing that struck me were the number of fences that were up, separating Zone A from Zone D, you know,
mm-hmm.
The rich and the poor. And there was the only two options, and they were just all over the place. And of course, when I got into the town, again, the child beggars. All over the, you know, swarming the cars at the intersections. And this is something that's kind of hard, you know, because, you know, as a deacon, I have to give, and I feel like I have to give. And,
right. Because you're trying to walk the walk and talk the talk and live
exactly
the life.
Exactly, right. I'm not just doing the talking business. But this is the problem, because a lot of these children are in syndicates, crime syndicates. The crime syndicates run the beggars. So you're not too sure exactly where the money's going. And the problem is, if you give a lot, then the beggar thinks, hey, this is actually working out, so why should I stop? So, but things about the Philippines is it never seems to change. I could go back in 30 years, and I think the same situations would still be there.
You could probably go back, and I don't mean to be too overly cynical, Robert, but you could probably go back 300 or 3,000 years.
Yeah.
And things would be similar.
Yeah.
And it begs the question about, our so-called modern attitude, our so-called Christianity, our so-called faiths, and it's not limited to that. I mean, there are charitable aspects to Islam and to Buddhism, and other faiths as well. And yet, you know, we tolerate it. I was struck to my very core when we arrived in Washington, D.C. We were across the street from the National City Christian Church, beautiful structure, and then directly across the street from us was a Lutheran church of just gorgeous architecture, and it had a gate in front of it.
Okay.
And a homeless man had climbed that locked gate to sleep behind that gate on the front steps of that Lutheran church.
Wow.
And the image, you know, I wasn't going to be a barbarian and take a photograph, because it's not the kind of thing you do. It's seared into its purpose in my seeing it was for me to have it seared into my memory. And I looked at the person I was with, and I just said, right there is proof of the death of organized religion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because frankly, that man shouldn't have been sleeping in that doorway. If that's a functioning church, that door should have been open. There should have been someone there taking that person in, making sure he had a decent meal, making sure he got a chance to get cleaned up if he wanted to, making sure that he had a decent place to lay his head. But no, he was sleeping in front of a locked door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was the
same thing in the Philippines? You got these beautiful cathedrals, you know, Catholic and also United Church of Christ. Gorgeous things, and huge, huge. But, you know, before them you see the shanties, and right next to them the shanties, and incredible. It just blows your mind.
Well, you know, the what's the difference in this guy sleeping? I mean, if that's how it's going to be, what's the difference in him sleeping in front of a locked door of a church and the locked door of a bank? Because the impulse that locks the door, Robert, is the same. Well, we can't let him into the bank. He'll just come in and take all the money. Well, we can't let him into the church. This is a nice church.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same. You know, it's the same discussion I had with my own Japanese congregation. You know, last year. So, if you invite one in, my God, more would come. But you know, that's the whole point. You know, you would want more to come. So.
Feed my sheep.
Yep. Exactly. So. But, you know, when I got in, I read the newspaper, and it, the news at the time last month was the oil spill down in Philippines, which was, I don't think it made too much news in America, but it was pretty bad. They were using bamboo poles, coconut husks, rice straws to contain the pollution.
Oh, that's not going to work.
Yeah, the worst oil spill in Philippine history, yeah. 520,000 gallons of industrial fuel.
Oh, and God only knows what it killed, literally.
Yeah. And they also said, let's see, only 5% of the reefs in the Philippines are in excellent shape, so 95% are distressed. And lots of killings of Christian activists, Philippine fishermen, union leaders, and stuff like that by Arroyo. And so it was just, you know, pretty miserable situation going on.
The crackdown is on worldwide.
Yeah.
And it's always aimed at working people.
Yeah. It was very targeted. You know, kill this activist, kill that activist.
Well, in Iraq, not to shift too far around the globe, but in Iraq, one of the first things that happened once we set up the Coalition Provisional Authority is that union tradesmen in Iraq started getting bumped off. Because they were going to get in the way of Jerry Bremer's new free democratized Iraq, and you know how a working person it gets in the way of democracy, I'll never know. But it was a clear and present threat to them, and they started dropping like flies.
Yep. But I went over to the Alaya Museum, which is the historical museum down in downtown Makati, which is the only nice section in the Philippines. And they had several 80, 90 dioramas of the history of the Philippines. And one that caught my eye was the 50th one, the American reprisals in Samar, because, you know, the Americans took over the Philippines in 1899.
Right.
And that was the first genocide of America that America caused. Over 100,000 Filipinos died in that situation, that war. Which is, you know, that never makes it into the history books, you know.
Well, that's the basis or the inspiration for Mark Twain's The War Prayer.
Exactly. And the one thing that was very interesting, because, you know, a lot of this, I mean, it's you go, golly gee, wonkers, haven't we seen this before? And it kind of repeats. There were about 44 American soldiers that were killed in this little battle. And so the Republicans at the time said, well, we can't have this. And they sent General Jacob Smith to pacify Samar, which is an island in the southeast. And over 50,000 of those people died within a couple months, from October to February.
Yeah, it was wholesale slaughter.
Yeah, it was anyone over 10 years old or above.
Right, and so, you know, it's some people, Robert, find it hard to believe that an American commander, at least according to the documents thus far adduced at the preliminary hearing in the court-martial, they find it difficult to believe that an American commanding officer would tell enlisted men to go and kill every military-aged male in a particular village in Iraq. Why is that hard to believe? We've been doing it.
We're doing it for so long.
We're pros.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure if there's some right winger listening, oh, you know, there goes Bob. He's America bashing again. You know, I don't understand this country, Robert. I don't understand a country that finds itself unable to confront the evil it has done. You know, at least the Japanese people have confronted to a large extent what they did during the Second World War. The German people have confronted their atrocities and they've made personal determinations of never again. Now, I understand there's a right wing move on in Japan now where they want to have their own military and build it up and blah, blah, blah. But there was an attempt at some sort of personal society, you know, personal and societal wholesale the reconciliation. We have yet to engage in anything of the sort in this country, whether it be the Native Americans, whether it be slavery. We have never confronted it face to face and tried to come to any sort of a reconciliation. And to answer your previous question, for so long as we fail and refuse to do so, we will continue to commit these atrocities on a periodic basis.
Again and again and again, yeah.
Yeah.
And when the Filipinos tried democracy in 1901, they formed a nationalistic party, which Governor Taft, that huge, fat Republican, suppressed under the sedition law.
Right.
Which kind of reminded me, you know, it's like in Iraq. Only the parties that they like get the go-ahead to actually run.
Well, you know, that's so. I thought about some of that while I was in D.C. because there's a big, beautiful grove of trees and this huge monument to Robert Taft.
Wow.
And gathered around it were a lot of recently emigrated union members from SEIU. And they were people who scrub floors and people who carry out the garbage and people who literally clean toilets. And they were all standing there because they were trying to point out that they are America, too. And there they stood in the shadow of one of the most hateful human beings that has ever occupied governmental space in this country. Why there is a monument to Robert Taft in Washington, D.C., I will never know. But then again, there's a Ronald Reagan building. There's a Ronald Reagan airport. You can't swing a dead cat in that city without hitting something that's been named after some filthy Republican.
Boggles my mind.
It does. It does indeed. But it's further proof that we refuse to learn.
Yep. And strangely enough, the victory of the Democratic Party in 1912 brought change. So the Democratic Party, not the Republicans, were pushed for independence and Filipinization of the island under the Jones Law. So there we have it.
Well, it does. It points the way toward hope.
Yeah.
And, or at least I hope it does.
But the one thing, you know, islands, I kind of like living on an island because the islands kind of, I don't know, they kind of show you the limitation of resources, and it kind of makes everything kind of crystal clear. And the one thing that really blew my mind was the traffic, of course, was still very bad, you know, bumper to bumper. And I learned at this time that only 30% of all the cars in the island could have been on the road at one time. The 70% were in garages because they had this new coding system in which if you have a vehicle, you can only drive it 2 days a week.
Wow.
And a lot of these cars, Bob, were not like the cars here we have in Japan, which are small and energy efficient. They were huge SUVs or jeepneys. And even the jeepneys were affected by this. The jeepneys is the Jeep that's been made into a long bus kind of thing that can mm-hmm, 20, mm-hmm. 20 people. And even those were affected by this law. So I was really surprised by this. So it's kind of like, well, why should we have any more cars on the road if only 20% of the, you know, 30% of the cars can be on the road at any one time? It's still bumper to bumper.
Yeah, and you know they've run slap out of island.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no more space, you know. And the other thing that I mean, it's the idea of this that we got to become wealthier, wealthier, wealthier. And my seminary, which is in Quezon City, St. Andrews, is right next to one of the biggest and best hospitals, richest of course. In the Philippines, which is St. Luke. And so there's a lot of traffic there. Parking was insane. And so one time I'm walking past the hospital parking, and there was no more parking in the hospital parking. There's no more parking in the seminary. And so 70 cars were going in the roundabout again and again and again, you know, and it was just the height of insanity. And then this one SUV pulls up next to me, kid, a fat Filipino kid, rolls down the window and throws a bunch of trash from the fast food restaurant right in front of me. So I kind of saw the problem here of a wealthy society. I mean, if all the Filipinos were like this, I mean, what the heck, you know? What success is that?
Yeah. Well, and it's certainly a marker of how we're going to define something like wealth.
Well, it's this. I mean, I like to go from wealth to a viable society. I mean, in Japan, we have the same problem. I mean, we have freighter after freighter of North Korean freighters taking our used, rusted bicycles out back to North Korea to fix up, and motorcycles. And then we have Russian freighters taking, you know, thousands upon thousands of our used cars after 3 years back to Russia.
And they'll strip them and press them, or will they just continue to use them?
They'll just continue to use them, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, even the Philippines is kind of like a hand-me-down society where a lot of the buses are from Korea and different Asian countries, and they're very polluting, you know, lots of smog, and so that's another big issue there. But, right before the hospital, there used to be a traffic light, and this kind of shows the war and the poor. But they got rid of the traffic light because the people in the cars didn't like to stop. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and the people in the cars are the rich, and the people in the, you know, that don't have cars are the poor, and they walk. And so they got rid of the traffic light, and they put up a barrier. So you had to walk about 10 meters, 20 meters past it, and then you had to run, dash across this very, very busy highway to get to the other side. So I always try to keep two or three Filipinos on my left or two or three Filipinos on my right just to make sure if there was a car that crashed into us, they, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I mean, that's the insanity of it. I mean, it's so ass backwards. But my seminarians were telling me, and some of the teachers there were saying that the people in the Congress have been there for 20 years. And even with the term limits, they play these games of going from the Senate to the House or back to the Senate, or having their, you know, tag team with their wives or their husbands. And so it's been the same people for the past 20 years, and they said they were nothing but less than predatory. And as I was mentioning on the chat board, that, you know, this is what democracy is always and always has been for the rich. I mean, we don't have many black poor janitors in Congress, do we?
No, we don't. We don't have many black poor anybody or white poor anybody or the Native American middle class. No, the middle, I mean, you know, and let's not limit it to the poor, Robert. We don't have, the middle class is not represented in Congress.
Right, exactly.
Because, well, I mean, I guess by virtue of the fact that the minute you get to Congress, you get a salary that makes you immediately not part of the middle class. You get raised into the top 5% of the economic strata of this country the minute you cash your first congressional paycheck.
And then they all whine that it's not enough. I mean, there was that one senator or representative that whined that she didn't have enough money for her kid's college education, and so...
Oh, I remember that. Oh. Well, what was that, Catherine Harris?
I can't remember.
Kid was going to USC or some such. Oh, I do. And, you know, I do understand to a certain extent because living there is expensive.
Yeah.
But I somehow don't think that $150,000 a year in Washington D.C. equates to making $12,000 in West Virginia.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I
think the solution there is that you should democracy should be based on economic class. So a representative should represent like a certain amount of the poor people. So if you have a salary and have had a salary for 5 years that represents that class, then you can represent those people. You do the pain, you represent the people.
That actually makes some sense. I've often thought that members of Congress, since they represent this district or that district, should actually be paid by their district and not by the federal government. And they should have members of Congress should have the same, absolute same health insurance that we give. They should all be on Medicaid.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then maybe, you know, then maybe Medicaid would get fixed.
So, but yeah, it's the same thing in the Philippines. I mean, it's all the rich people ruling over the poor Filipinos. And I read that the minimum wage law there is half of what is actually needed to keep a family at the level of poverty. So it's almost like a war on work as well, because why should you work? Because you can't even make enough money to feed your family.
Well, and we're engaged in that experiment here, too, Robert.
Oh, I mean, this is where they're taking you. I mean, the Philippines is the Republican vision of where you're all going. I mean, I was amazed by the penetration of the American fast food corporations and the business. I mean, Japan, you have to look for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have this, you know, like Pizza Hut or Taco Bell and another, you know, Slum and another fast food restaurant. And the fast food restaurants are very, very nice, but they're priced way out of proportion of what any Filipino could buy.
I can't imagine being in the South Pacific or in the in Asia. I can't imagine being anywhere on Earth. I can't imagine being in West Virginia and eating Taco Bell. It's just loathsome to me. But again, let's slide a little bit further around the globe. And something I mentioned a couple of nights ago, they marked the fifth anniversary of September 11th, the attacks in New York and Washington and Pennsylvania. They marked that in Afghanistan by opening a $25 million Coca-Cola bottling facility in Kabul.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, and you know, see, they make $200 a year. So even if you had a Coca-Cola that sells for 20 cents, you know, it's not happening, right?
Right. Who can drink it?
Who can drink it? I mean, so I was thinking, who could buy this stuff in the Philippines? I mean, because some people are making 3,000 pesos, maybe $80 a month. Some are, you know, maybe, you know, $8,200. But, you know, like Lebanon, they had a hard time repatriating the Filipinos during that war. Do you know why?
Why is that?
Well, because they didn't want to go back to the Philippines. They said, "Well, if I go back to the Philippines, I'm certain to die." So there's more hope in this bombed-out, you know, dust-filled wasteland than there is back in the Philippines. And I can see some logic. I mean, eventually some money will be coming into the Lebanon eventually.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Philippines, you know, nothing's going to go there.
No, but you know, we'd love to put our naval base back there. And
But I mean, in some ways, I mean, it's really a macho failed culture. I mean, none of my in-laws have ever had a job, and all their wives do all the work. So, really, I sent you an email about I spent some time, went down to the Igorot people. The Anglican Church is has an interesting history in the Philippines, because they had a non-competitive agreement with the Catholic Church, and so the only area that was left was the middle of the Philippines, the mountains, and in the south. And so the Anglican Church, unfortunately, has a bad rap among a lot of the Filipinos, because they're the church of the poor and the brown people.
I see. Yeah, I've got these photographs here. I'm trying to make my computer open them, but I'm... apparently not quite sharp enough to make that happen yet, but I do look forward to seeing them. Robert, we've got to roll along, but I certainly hope your Thursday is a good one, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Okay.
All right,
talk to you
next week,
then.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Robert calling from Japan. It is important that we get a little bit of perspective on the rest of the world. I think that is particularly important in light of we'll take a very quick break, but when we come back, here's the headline: Pope warns of tuning out Christianity. Here we go. Great to be back. If you want to jump in the conversation, please feel free to do so. 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Just
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
The absence of significant rock-based music of exceptional quality has resulted in the unthinkable.
Hell
has frozen over.
Nine minutes before the hour, and let's go back to the phones. We are joined by our good friend Jim. Welcome to the program, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Well, you know, in reference to your statue of William Howard Taft, it goes to show that old buildings, prostitutes, and politicians, if they hang around long enough, will eventually gain some type of respectability, right?
I think this was Robert Taft.
Or Robert Taft, yeah.
I mean, you're the D.C. insider, isn't that Robert Taft standing there down? If you're looking at the Capitol to the left,
he's real big. Yeah, he weighed 300 pounds.
Yeah,
they had to have a special bathtub to put him in.
I think they slimmed him down for the statue, Jim.
Well, anyway, I know that when he could not fit in a regular bathtub in the White House, that they had to have a special tub for him so he could bathe, and he's buried in Arlington. Now, you were talking about this National City Church. You talking about the National Cathedral?
No. It's called National City Christian Church.
Oh yeah, okay.
Up there on Thomas Circle. That's where we were.
Where's that?
Thomas Circle. Yeah, where Vermont and 14th and 15th all come together up there.
Oh, okay.
It's the area where Mary and Barry got busted. It's been cleaned up significantly since then.
Well, you see, you know, now, in all fairness to that church, Bob, you know, it would be nice if churches could keep their doors open 24 hours a day, but unfortunately, you have a lot of people who want to rob them, too. And, you know, in Washington particularly, you have, well, at one time when I lived there, it was called the murder capital of the world. I mean, there was a kid sitting on the steps of the Bulgarian embassy on Massachusetts Avenue, and somebody just shot him, killed him, drive by.
No, I don't doubt it.
I mean, right on Embassy Road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was like a stone's throw from the Naval Observatory where the Vice President lived. You know, it's just incredible. You know what goes on there. I mean, you know, and if you go over in the southeastern portion of the D.C. into Anacostia,
mm-hmm.
Well, you take your life into your own hands, particularly if you're in there after dark. If you're the wrong color. So, I mean, it's really pretty rough. But, you know, there has been in that area of Anacostia now, there have been some churches that have been able to get into there. And they have, and I saw a documentary on this, they have made significant inroads into cleaning up some of the gangs and trying to recapture the neighborhoods for the people. And, you know, it's not all bad, okay? Now, a lot of it is bad, yes, but there has been progress made. Progress has been made. Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Mine is a greater philosophical inquiry, or I don't know, moral inquiry about. Yeah, I know. You know, they there are probably people who would steal the very chalices off of the altar. I don't.
Well, they steal the sweetness out of a cake, and I can break the trust. You know that there are people who can do that. I mean, and you've got some people in high places, and now going into the congressional salaries, that's something else. If I can,
yeah, go ahead.
The philosophy behind paying these men this amount of money, and it's the same one that made civil servants. Have a living wage is to prevent these people, and don't laugh now, I know you're probably going to just probably guffaw, but the philosophy behind that is to if they pay these people enough money, they'll be less susceptible to corruption and graft.
No, I don't find that funny at all. That's that is the theory behind it.
I mean, it is the theory behind it. So they wanted to, in other words, they figured if they would pay people a handsome salary, that they would be less susceptible to people who could go in and augment a poorer person making a poorer salary. Therefore, you know, it would keep them honest.
But it seems to have been turned rather on its ear, hasn't it, Jim?
Well, I'm afraid I'm afraid you're right there, because I mean, it's you have so many. Well, look at people like Duke Cunningham. And, you know, we had a conversation a long time ago. I think it's back when you were on terrestrial radio, and I told you which street ran the Capitol.
Oh, yeah. I walked up and down it, too.
It was K Street.
We walked right by Zbigniew Brzezinski carrying on a conversation.
Oh, right. Carter's former Secretary of State.
Yeah, right there. Yeah, right there on K Street.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he's all these guys, when they retire from their government jobs, have good jobs waiting for them in lobbyist office and things like that.
And right, and consequently, they have to do the right thing while they're in office, or they'll never get the sweetheart job offer.
Well, you know, that's right, and a lot of them are representing foreign governments in the Capitol. That's just
well.
The
look,
way it,
I mean, yeah, I mean, James Baker III, the Bush consigliere. You know, he defended the Saudi kingdom against people whose family members were slaughtered on September 11th, and had no problem walking right into court and saying that the Saudi princes were far more important than some working schlub in New York City.
Well, you know what you said before, it's great work if you can get it, right?
Yeah, I guess.
But, you know, changing the subject now, what is this business about Iraq and our having to desert parts of the country because we simply can no longer, exert any type of control?
Well, apparently we've given up on Al-Anbar province. Al-Anbar province has claimed more United States Marines than any other part of Iraq. And Jim, I got a feeling this Marine general is going to find himself cashiered pretty quickly, because you don't just say that in the
book. Is he the one who said they would have to have another 60,000 people?
Yeah. Yeah,
and have 6,000 Marines to give, do you?
Well, but see, I don't know if we. I frankly don't know if we do or not.
I don't think so.
But the other side of that is it's that damn bass-ackward thinking that frankly we got during the Johnson administration, that, you know, they didn't realize that they were fundamentally wrong for being in Vietnam, and no matter how many people they threw at it, they were still going to be wrong. You know, they were going to be 250,000 wrong, 500,000 wrong, 1,000,000 wrong. But they didn't realize they were still wrong. We could throw 600,000 more Marines into Al-Anbar province, and it would not change the status on the ground, because it is wrong.
Well, I mean, we're going into an area, and that we're not even nation building. This is a pacification type of operation, and apparently it's a pacification operation that in many cases has been conducted by terminating.
With extreme prejudice,
and you know that's not going to exactly win the hearts and minds of people. And you know, I've said from day one this war was wrong, this whole administration has been wrong, and I don't understand how these people have been allowed to get away with what they've been doing. But But, you know, I don't know what to say.
We can't give up, Jim.
No, I know that, but, I mean, that's the reason that I've been constantly aware of the fact that I'll be able to vote in a couple of weeks, you know, by absentee, and make my modest contribution to seeing the right thing done, and at least from my point of view. And I hope that God will let me stay here till 2008 so I can vote for somebody. But you're right, and you're one of the callers. I guess that when you talk about Wayne, I think he was right, because this is going to be, it's still not a very pleasant expression, but it's going to be rear ends and elbows as far as the type of fighting that's going to be exerted, because Karl Rove and his company have yet to really come out.
But it's beginning to happen, and I've got examples of it that I hope to get to later in the evening.
Howard Fineman from Newsweek was on IMS this morning, and he was discussing the fact that there will be a two-pronged attack. And, I mean, we may have discussed this earlier today, but the first would be in support of the terror mission that the Bush administration upholds that has kept us safe. And the second prong of the attack will be directed toward Nancy Pelosi, since if they should regain control of the House, she would be the Speaker of the House, and they were going to try to do everything they can to her and paint her as a Chanel-wearing liberal who lives in San Francisco who loves terrorists.
A limousine liberal. Let's not forget that one. Jim, we're out of time, but I thank you for everything.
Well, okay, but I mean, it's going to be less than pleasant, and it's going to be pretty nasty. So.
And it's going to run downhill in a hurry.
Well, it always does.
You're right. You're right. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, good night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
And it is time for the news. We'll come back, take more of your calls if you want. 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. More than a dozen people were killed in Baghdad today, and 65 bodies were reported found, most if not all of them showing signs of torture. Also, three more U.S. soldiers were killed in the last 24 hours, two in Anbar province, the other near Baghdad. None of the 26 member nations have responded to NATO's request for additional troops in Afghanistan. NATO's top commander says the 18,500-strong force that's already stationed there is still 15% less than full strength. In Montreal today, at least one gunman opened fire at a college campus, killing at least four and wounding more than a dozen others, some of them critically. Police say they shot and killed one gunman. In Syria, the government says the gunmen who tried to storm the U.S. embassy in Damascus yesterday were Syrian and possibly tied to an Al-Qaeda splinter group. All four of them, as well as a Syrian security officer, are dead. On Capitol Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved a bill to have the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court review the controversial domestic spying program. Democrats are expected to derail the measure when it goes before the full Senate next week. And the Armed Services Committee is backing a bill that authorizes military tribunals for suspected terrorists. It includes a provision that would prevent defendants from accessing certain evidence. But Republican Senator John Warner is already working on an alternative bill. In Southern California, British Petroleum is working to clean up 1,000 barrels of oil that leaked into the waters off Long Beach yesterday. The company is already under fire after an oil spill in Alaska's Prudhoe Bay. Also in Southern California, firefighters continue battling an out-of-control brush fire 40 miles north of L.A. The fire has been burning close to Interstate 5 for the past 2 days. The highway was closed in both directions for several hours, but some parts have now reopened. NOAA says El Nino has formed over the Pacific and is suppressing hurricanes in the Atlantic with its warming effect. This winter, it's expected to bring warmer temperatures in the western and northern U.S. but wetter conditions in the Gulf Coast and Florida. Atlanta spacewalkers have lost a second bolt, spring, and washer for the second time in as many days. They floated off into space while the astronauts continued working on the space station. Atlantis will return to Earth next week. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and Science News is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new bird species has been discovered in India, the first there in 50 years. An amateur ornithologist discovered the multicolored bird in May. During a trip to China next week, U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is expected to push for economic reform, including making Chinese currency more flexible. He says the Bush administration will oppose any efforts to punish China for the U.S.-China trade gap. California's attorney general says criminal charges could be brought within the week in Hewlett-Packard's media leak scandal. Chairwoman Patricia Dunn announced yesterday that she'll step down in January. Two other board members have already resigned. Former HealthSouth executive Mike Martin will serve 3 years in prison starting October 12th. A judge handed down that sentence for his role in a nearly $3 billion fraud at the company. Foreclosures are up in the U.S. More than 115,000 homes went into foreclosure last month. That's 53% higher than a year ago. And Stanford University Hospital says it will no longer accept samples or gifts from drug company salesmen. Salesmen will now have to make appointments to be seen. California's minimum wage will go up to $8 an hour starting on January 1st. The federal minimum is $5.15. Light sweet crude settled today at $64.12. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 45 points, NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, and welcome back. Coming up on 7 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. This is Head On, and straight to the phones we go. Our good friend Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee, has been waiting. Hey, Luke, welcome.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it was just so enjoyable last night to see Mr. Stewart back on the air. I loved it when you sit down to talk to George and pulled out the hay bale and put the hat on.
I caught a little bit of that.
And I was like, well, it looks a lot more real than the place Bush does down in Crawford. So, but... Oh, have you seen this thing now that, well, actually, I think we talked about it the other day, about Scarborough going after Stewart. Oh, yeah, he's ruining kids for politics.
Oh, yeah, that he's creating a generation of political cynics. It wasn't
that's what
that...
we need.
Well, you know, no, you can't create cynicism.
I mean, we need those guys to start saying things like, you know, this is crazy. You know?
Well, yeah, point to the crazy people, and those are...
And don't be afraid to say, they're crazy.
You know, and, you know, they're mean.
Yeah.
Point to the mean people and say, those are mean people. You know, the Republican Party is made up of mean people. I got a story right here, Luke, and you sort of walked me into it.
Okay.
The Republican National Committee.
Oh.
They've hired an intern, and the intern has planned, you know, because they study at the feet of the master, after all. This is up in Michigan, by the way. They've planned catch an illegal immigrant games and fun with guns events. Now, dig this. Now, just for a second, imagine what would be happening if a Democrat was doing something remotely similar to this. Morgan Wilkins, the intern hired by the Republican National Committee to win the hearts and minds of Michigan 20-somethings, is planning events that some may find odd. To others, they may be offensive. One such idea is Catch an Illegal Immigrant Day, in which a volunteer would play the part of an illegal immigrant and hide somewhere on campus while others try to find him. The winner would receive a prize. Her other ideas, Morgan has, include an event called Fun with Guns, in which... In which... young Republicans would use a BB or paintball gun to shoot cardboard cutouts of Democratic leaders like Hillary Clinton and John Kerry.
Oh, God.
I mean, this is, but you know, they can get away with it. I mean, we expect it of them. We expect them to be mean and rotten and hateful and nasty and vile. And we, because, you know, these, like I said, they studied at the foot of the master. I have no doubt that little Morgan Wilkins is a devotee and has read every word that the Ann Coulter Geist has ever written. And she thinks this is fun.
I was going to say, is this Morgan, whoever, did she get time off from O'Reilly and Limbaugh to go do this? I'm just curious.
I'm sure this has got to be Ann Coulter's briefcase toter.
Well, you know, you saw we talk about how the right wingers hold a grudge. I saw the other night that O'Reilly is still pulling. He pulled out a piece of tape that he is still going after George Clooney.
Oh God!
He had some guest on and pulled out a piece of tape from back when they were doing one of the charity things after Katrina, I think it was, or something. And he's showing this thing, and I'm sitting there going, "This is so long ago. What are you doing?"
They've got to hang on to the past because their present is untenable and unbearable to them right now, Luke.
Well, and I saw the thing over there. I sent you the link thing about Tucker Carlson going after Gore. You know, and I'm sitting there going, "Okay, why are you going after him? Because you don't want him running. That's why you're going after him."
Well, yeah, and because they were never, frankly, they were never able to drag Gore down to their filthy level, Luke.
Well, it's one of those things. Like I say, they're trying to clear the field, so it's just Hillary. You know, I'm surprised they haven't started on Edwards.
They will.
The others.
Oh, they'll haul out the business about, you know, Edwards is trafficked in the misery of human beings. That's how he got rich. I mean, I know the games, Luke. I expect it. And the thing is, all I can do here is try to put it out there and let people know, you know, this is coming.
Shine the light on it. Like,
yeah.
Hey, here's what they're doing, and guess why they're doing it.
Turn the light on. Watch the roaches scatter.
It's one of those things. It's like I say, when you sit there and watch what they do, and if you watch it, you'll pull back a little bit and watch it sort of as a whole picture. You can see the pattern. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, say, they're going. You notice they really aren't attacking people like Hillary. They aren't attacking her directly.
No. They're waiting for her.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're attacking all the people to knock everybody else down, so that way she's the only choice. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But
well, the same way they destroyed Howard Dean, so that we would have to have John Kerry for our nominee.
Did you see that? I think I sent you the link on this one. The thing about I watched little bits of it, but I sat and watched the whole thing. The Matt Lauer interview.
Oh God.
With Shrub.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I'm beginning to wonder. I thought Shrub was going to lose it. I really did. Because I mean, Matt was kind of getting in there on him.
Well, he got a couple of shots in.
So it's one of those things. I'm just waiting. I'm just trying to guess which one of the media toadies will be ask him the wrong question and he'll finally blow up. You know, I'm figuring somewhere down the line this is going to happen.
It depends on his medication status. I mean, I'm watching him these days, and all you got to do is look at his face, and you know that. I mean, we're talking at least a handful of Klonopin, you know, Xanax, something like that.
Well, it's like you're just sitting there counting ticks.
Yeah. The Kane Mutiny was on TV earlier today. I walked through. My dad was watching it, and there's Humphrey Bogart with those two. They thought I was crazy, but I fooled him. I fooled him with the strawberries.
Yeah.
You know, George is going to whip those two steel balls out and start working. We're talking about strawberries one of these days. And the thing is, you know, the rest of us are going to go, well, we knew he was crazy. We knew there was something desperately wrong, but the thing is, there's still that weird little 23% of America that's going, oh, that proves that, you know, that proves how godly he is. Those are little prayer balls in his hands.
I tell you,
I'm telling you the truth.
I still say the DNC. Every time Bush appears, they should have every side of the building he comes, so they catch whatever side he comes out of. They should have somebody in that Mr. Salty costume waving the bag.
We got another one for you, George. Now, see, we'll get carried off for talking about that while, you know, while the young Republicans in Michigan are out blowing away Hillary and John Kerry cutouts.
Oh, well, I just always, well, when you said that, you know what that reminds you of? I always remember, was it G. Gordon?
Yeah.
And he was just so proud of that. And I'm like, oh, God. The one original psychopath of their party. And it's like, you're taking cues from him?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, I know. Oh, I mean, you know, like I say, this is a man who, like I say, he channels crazy quite well, you know. And
well, he and, you know, he and Chuck Colson. And again, we're talking about the feet of the masters, because that, I mean, that's a, the generation that got caught up in Richard Nixon's utter criminality. These are the people who told youngsters back then. You remember, you know, in the Nixon administration, Cheney and Rumsfeld were young 30-somethings going, tell us more, master.
How should we do it? How should we do it?
Right.
Speak to us.
They're right. And so consequently, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. It was the hardest, weirdest little core of Nixonites that gave rise to the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls and the Cheneys and the Rumsfelds and all of these other evil SOBs.
Well, I sent you that thing from The Guardian. I see they're starting to get into it. They're like, hey, you all lied to us.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole world's going to turn on us eventually, Luke. And yeah. And I mean, you know, when we get to the point where Liechtenstein says, listen, we got to talk, and we're fast approaching that point.
I know it's sort of like, you know, we're just waiting. You know, there's like you saw the thing where they were talking about they're sending one of the secretaries. I can't remember which one it was, over to China. It's like, well, we can't tick them off. They've got paper on us. You know how it is. So.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's like, just don't send Daddy over to have any meals.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't let him call the debt.
but like I say, it's like I say, every time you, like I say, this next, what was it, 6 weeks or so, 7 weeks, it's like I say, anytime y'all see anybody out there sees any story, don't take it to face value. Look behind the scenes, because they're going to be putting out misinformation, disinformation.
No, but there's enough reality out there to keep us busy.
But you know what I mean? I mean, they're going to flood it, you know, everywhere they can. Anybody that's doing good right now, I saw that, was it Mr. Webb is apparently now ahead of Mr. Allen.
Yeah. He's not outside the margin of error yet, is he?
No, but he's heading in that direction, let's put it that way.
You know, and it's interesting. I don't know if there's any correlation, but I'm reading a book, and we're going to have a gentleman on the program tomorrow night, the author of a book about his internment at Guantanamo Bay. He's a British citizen. His name is Mozambeg, and he talks, you know, just the sort of editorial mentions you get in the front of the book that deal with the foreign names and things like that. And he says that, you know, he's going to spell Mecca, M-A-K-K-A, because that's the closest he can get to the Arabic. And I've been reading the book because I want to be prepared for the interview, and I think we're in the conversation. I think we're going to have a great conversation tomorrow evening. But it sort of resonated inside my brain, Luke, and I kept reading Maka, Maka, Maka.
And we're going to follow George Allen forever.
But that's how he refers to Mecca, Mr. Begg does. And then I went, Makaka. This wasn't about a monkey. This was a Muslim slur.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's either that, or some of them said, you know, that's where his mother was from. It's from the, was it Mozambique? No. It's over in that general area, over the African area,
mm-hmm.
where that was. That's where his mother's from, and that's where that word comes from. And there's like saying, you know, that's such an odd word to come up. It's like, well, mama taught it to him.
Learned it in the cradle. Learned it in the cradle.
Oh, I was talking about the poll numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Mr. Corker's people won't release their latest some of their polls because, according to Mr. Ford's people, that Mr. Ford is starting to pull away a little.
Well, you know, I hope Harold Ford. Tennessee has far too many decent people to be saddled up with Lamar Alexander and another filthy Republican.
Well,
you know,
one thing they're starting to mention is, you do know that Mr. Corker refused to go on Russert's show.
No.
Him and Harold Ford were going to be, well, they offered it to Ford that they were going to have them, you know, Russert's doing these weekend.
Right, like in Florida, where they won't let Brian Moore come on with Catherine Harris and Joe Lieberman with a better tan.
You know, he's been having these debates with the two candidates sit down.
Right.
Apparently they offered it to them. Ford said yes. Corker said no.
Well, I don't think Corker probably couldn't be in the same room with Harold Ford intellectually speaking.
Well, like I say, they've got three of them planned here in the state, but of course, you know how little coverage on TV that'll get. It's one of those things. I don't think they want Corker to appear on stage in front of the camera with him that everybody can see. Because, like you say, when you put him up against Harold Ford, you know, whatever you think of him, he's a conservative Democrat. Okay, I can live with that. But like I say, it'd be fun having him debate George Bush because Harold Ford can speak English. I'm not sure about George.
No. Well, you know, I mean, there's George Bush won't debate Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and George Bush will not debate Nancy Pelosi, and George Bush will not debate anyone without the stupid little box in his suit. We stopped in a cigar shop while we were in D.C. called Draper's. And because my good friend Bruce Birch has become quite the cigar aficionado. But right there, staring us right in the face, was the shop of one Georges de Paris. And that's the guy who made the suits, when they came out and they had the black box pictures from the debates showing George's little receiver. They said, well, you know, that's a tailoring flaw. And poor Mr. Georges de Paris in that wonderful wonderful Gallic sense of having been wronged had to run out and say, I do not make arrows in my hand-tailored suit. There are no square boxed arrows in my suit.
It's one of those things. I still wish that, you know, I still want to see somebody over in the corner with Mr. Microphone.
Hey, honey, we'll be back to pick you up later. I remember the commercial, too, Luke.
Oh, no. My favorite one, like I still say to this day, was one time they did Saturday Night Live, and Robin Williams was the guest, and he was doing Reagan impersonation. And he was wearing the box. It was like the end of Reagan's, I guess, 85, 86, something like that. And they had him wearing the earpiece. And he's out there, and all of a sudden he starts picking up, like, police cars. You know? And he's doing DJs the whole time. Oh, if you ever see it, it's a hilarious bit. But like I say, he's wearing the earpiece, and all of a sudden they can't get hold of him. They're back there turning dials. And like, oh, no.
Car 54, where are you?
Well,
hey, Luke, we got
to
roll on. Good talking to you, Luke. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. I feel a little bad because we didn't deal with Dear Leader's speech from Monday night. But what was there to deal with in Dear Leader's speech Monday night except the fact that he did what everybody knew he would do? He was supposed to be commemorating the 9/11 attacks, and instead he talked about Iraq and the Central War on Terror. So I hope you'll forgive me if I didn't have an aneurysm over that. It's gotten boring. It really has. It seems rather a waste of precious time. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Rick is calling in from Texas. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good, Brother Rick. Doing good.
Yeah, hallelujah.
Amen.
I have to compliment your listeners. They have to be the most intelligent people that listen to any radio program in the world.
Well, thank you. I thank you on their behalf. I think they are, too.
You talk at a level. You do not talk down to them. And if they can follow you, and they obviously are, then they have to be extremely intelligent. And to tune into something like was yesterday, that was just magnificent. To hear that again, I haven't heard anything like that since the 60s. Back in the 60s, I was in the anti-war movement, moratorium against the war. And we had that at colleges every weekend. And we always felt like nobody was listening. Of course they did. And the world did move. And with what y'all did yesterday, you moved the world. It doesn't have to be a lot.
Yeah, we'll start with a gentle shove.
Ah, then go from there. I love that. I would like to say one thing. Y'all were talking about the Tame Mutiny and Bush having a couple of steel balls to roll around and everything.
Yeah.
He would be happy to have any kind of ball.
See, I was leaving that hanging out there waiting for somebody. And I'm glad it was you, Rick.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Oh, good Lord. The rewrite of history, ABC's little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Expect it. It's going to happen. It happened a little sooner than I thought, and that's the only surprise I had. They rewrote the history with ray guns.
Mm-hmm.
They named everything in the world after him. And what we need to learn from this is, very simply, if we do not get in there and we do not impeach him, they are going to rewrite history in their view, and kids are going to grow up believing it. Because this stuff is going to hit the school.
Sure.
Teachers are going to get lazy. They're going to hand this stuff out fist over hand. The teachers will get lazy, throw the films in, and kids are going to see it, and they're going to say, oh, well.
Well, you know, Scholastic withdrew their little talking points memo that they had done as a tie-in with ABC, Rick. But you know what? I'm not worried so much about the kids in the public schools, especially kids in public schools who have teachers who are members of organizations like AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, because excuse me, those are union members, and they're not going to be swayed by a bunch of generally not going to be swayed by a bunch of right-wing crap. But I worry about the poor little kids that have to go to the religion schools, because they're going to have this stuff handed to them as literally gospel.
Well, in Texas, they have the right to work, or in other words, right not to, the rules not to unionize in Texas. And although a few teachers are a member of the union, most aren't.
More's the pity, because they only hurt themselves that way.
Well, the kids are being hurt, too.
Sure.
Because they're feeding this stuff to the kids. And in Texas, that's the reason why they're growing up and voting Republican. Because they've been spoon-fed all these years.
Well, it was, like I said, it was only after Reagan had become president. I graduated high school in 1981, Rick, and everybody can do the math and figure out my age.
About 69 for me.
Well, but see, what had happened, though, is I graduated just as Ronnie Reagan was getting his filthy mitts into the heart of the government and really beginning to mount that conservative attack, right-wing attack, whatever you want to call it, on the very essence of what makes us the union. And it was after that that you started seeing things like, I had to have civics, but, you know, Ronnie Reagan gets into office, and a little bit later, nobody has civics. This is enforced ignorance, Rick.
Forced ignorance. It's just like the rules about mercury. Oh, so great. You know, the kids come out retarded. How's it going to hurt the Republicans? So that's why they let the mercury level get as high as it is.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? At best, they don't vote. And, you know, when you don't vote, the Republicans win.
When you don't vote, the Republicans always win. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't do that.
Nor I.
I wrote you an email once, said, you know, what if Bush isn't leaving?
I know.
But you know that I love the devil a little bit into writing, and that I've kind of put together a little thing. And here's a synopsis of it. Think about it this way. If during the election, the next one, it looks like the Democrats are going to win the presidency, what would happen if all of a sudden some Al-Qaeda guy managed to accidentally get into Congress, throw one hand grenade in one section of Congress, and wipes out a great many of one party? It would be very simple for Bush to say, oh, my God, we got a problem here. Let's hold off on the election. Everything's going fine now. Let's go ahead and elect Congress, because that's what we need. We need that branch. Most important thing, we've got to have it. And I'll just stay here, and I'll leave immediately after. And then the Republicans that are left says, okay, fine, let's do this. And it gets done.
And I can't forget the fact that they floated that trial balloon along about September of 2004, saying, well, you know, if we are attacked again, we might have to postpone the 2004 presidential election.
Absolutely. And then you got them counting the votes. You get it filled up with Republicans all the way through, and then guess who gets to stay?
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, I don't know. I honest to God don't know, Rick, if we could get enough people, if we could pull a Lithuania or, you know, and put a few million people in the streets and demand that he step down. I don't want to believe that there's any way possible.
I don't either.
That he would refuse to leave. I want to believe that somewhere in the Republican Party, and I think I may be engaging in magical thinking along the lines of some sort of treatable illness. But I have to believe that there's somebody in the Republican Party that would go and say, you know, you got to leave.
There would be a few, but you know how to guarantee that?
How's that?
Vote Democrat getting impeached. He never has a chance. Now, here's the wonderful part about that. Okay, the House goes Democrat. Pelosi gets moved up, Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Okay, you impeach Bush. Then you have to impeach Cheney. Cause
well, you do. I think you go for a twofer on that, Rick.
Okay, and then what are you left with? Who is next in line?
Well, that's the Speaker of the House, sure.
Speaker of the House, Pelosi. Now, see, that would guarantee that you got two ways to guarantee that something like that isn't going to happen, although I'm sure it wouldn't happen, but it is a guarantee.
Well, you know, the scariest thing, there's a new exclusive out over at bradblog.com, our good friend Brad Friedman, who does excellent work on election fraud. He has released an article at length. There is a new study out at Princeton University. And last I checked, even though they did graduate Sammy Alito, there is still some respect for that institution left in this country. I'll just read straight from it, Rick. A vote for George Washington could easily be converted to a vote for Benedict Arnold on an electronic voting machine, and neither the voter nor the election officials administering the election would ever know what happened. It wouldn't require a conspiracy theory or a conspiracy at all. It could be done by a single person with just a few moments of access to the voting systems. And these are new findings in a detailed, illustrated on videotape in a new first-of-its-kind study released by computer scientists and security experts at Princeton. And you can see a version of the video demo at the Princeton website. The Brad Blog report says the website's really getting hammered right now. But if you wait a while, there's a quick flash version available on Brad Blog as well. So I encourage people to go and watch it. But they say that a computer virus, Rick, can be implanted on an electronic voting machine that in turn results in votes flipped for opposing candidates.
You know, I believe that. And, you know, I don't even think it has to do that. Look at that one district in Ohio that had 3,000 voters, but 6,000 votes for Bush.
Yeah. Well, what was it? Gahanna, Ohio had 800 registered voters, but 3,000 Bush votes?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sure.
Yes. Exactly.
I know.
It's so easy. And you don't have to be a conspiracy nut. I mean, some of the stuff is just...
You know, and I'm getting called on the carpet in the chat room right now, Rick, by saying that there might be some principled Republican somewhere who would go and say you got to go. You know, because I think that the person is right, because you know the Bushistas would just look at him and say, hey, you get to stay too.
Yeah. Good.
There is only one alternative, Rick. There is only one alternative.
There's only one alternative.
These people must be voted out of office.
Be voted out of office.
And it has to happen this November.
And if it doesn't happen this November, the conspiracy could happen. See how easy it is. One hand grenade.
Yeah.
And you have somebody, let's say, look, Liddy, G. Gordon Liddy said he'd be happy to kill for the president.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, back to the feet of the masters. And it's... Rick, sometimes I feel like I'm just coming unglued. I feel like I'm losing my mind because I think about things that should not be conceivable in a rational universe, and they seem to make perfect sense. I go back to, you know, you're a little bit older than me, so you're not going to have a lot of trouble when I bring up Operation Northwoods. You know, and the CIA is all in a dither. Their plan to discredit Fidel Castro by making his beard fall out has just yeah. You know has not worked. Doggone it.
It took me a second, but then I remembered.
Yeah, and the CIA goes to John Kennedy and says, "Mr. President, we have a plan. It's called Operation Northwoods. What we'll do is we will bomb a really big building in the United States, and it'll be absolutely crystal clear that the Cubans did it, and that will give you casus belli to go to war with Cuba. What do you think?" And John Kennedy said, "Why do you crazy?" Crazy?
Oh, God, they went to the wrong president. They should have waited.
Well, a couple of months later, you know, John Kennedy's dead.
Yep.
And Operation Northwoods gets shelved, and it didn't come out for years.
And now they're starting to reclassify everything, but we can't even get that.
Right. So that can go down the memory hole.
Well, okay, here's something. You got really intelligent listeners.
Okay.
Out there someplace, I want them to look this up. I remember very, very well. I never watched MSNBC before the 2000 election. The night that I watched it, Brian Williams was on. It was late at night, and Florida was being called. And it was jumping between Bush and Gore. And at one point, it came out, and it was Gore has it for sure. And Brian Wilson said, right there on national cable TV, they are stealing the election from us. An obvious statement of his Republican link. But yet the guy sits up and says, no, I'm an independent. I've never been a Republican. Find it and then play it.
It's got to be out there.
It's out there. One of your guys, one of your ladies, one of your brilliant people out there, they are smart. We'll find it.
Well, and, you know, there's that other video of election night 2000. They're sitting there in Texas.
I couldn't have won, lost Florida.
Sorry, Jeb's going to have a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. There is no way that we could have lost Florida. And I'm over there, well, why not? Because the fix was in.
You know, the fix was in, and they knew it, and we didn't.
And that's because even with everything I went through under Nixon, everything I went through in the 60s, everything I saw in my life, I still have a fundamental belief. Goodness of both parties. See, when you get right down to it, I still have a fundamental belief that we will pull together when we need to. But I think those days are gone.
Well, we are smack dab in the middle of need to. Now, I'm hoping that the $40 million that the AFL-CIO has said that they will pour into getting out the vote, I'm hoping that that'll be done in such a way that it'll make a difference.
I do too.
If it goes into little bags of sunflower seeds and emery boards, we're screwed.
We are in trouble.
If on the other hand we use the technology that's available to us, and couple that with some old school boots on the ground stuff, where you go and you take folks to the polls and you give them a ride and you don't quit until the polls close and you're wore out at the end of the day and you say, by God, I did everything that I could.
Right.
We got a chance.
And make sure that everything counts. Now, here's another part of that. We're smarter than they are. So that amount of money will go a lot further than what Republicans do. We can use the Internet. We can use technology. We can do so much more. Because we're the smarter older brothers. Sorry. Or younger brothers. Doesn't matter. We're the smarter ones. We can take that seed money and turn it into something big.
Yeah.
We know how to do it. We can do it.
And
it's like the thing I was talking about before where I said, you know, I really do not worry at all about Crystal Thatcher because there were only about 4 million who actually voted. Now, there are 59 million who voted last time. You honestly think that any party is going to allow 4 out of 59 people to make up all the rules for the country? The Republicans know that the Christian right have no power whatsoever. They know this. That's why they don't give them anything.
That's why abortion is still legal, Rick.
Because they could stop abortion. The idiots should know that they could stop it. They have both parties. They have the court.
Under oath, Michael Scanlon, assistant to Jack Abramoff, refers to Ralph Reed and his Christian wackos. Mm-hmm. Under oath before Congress, and they've never heard it to this day. You know, Dr. Land or whatever at the cult, otherwise known as the Southern Baptist Convention, he's never let his membership hear that the right wing, the Republicans that they support with such passionate fervor, thinks of them as religious wackos.
That they're not going to give a darn thing to. And it's the same thing with follow me to hell. It's the same thing with rubber stud. It's the very same thing. They are rich. They want the Republicans in. They're the ones who get the money that's handed over to faith-based charities. It doesn't go to anybody else.
Sure, they are.
Churches, they're getting their pockets lined. They are getting a gigantic payoff, and then they don't have to pay taxes on anything. And they got these people, these idiots, excuse me, and they're pulling them around by their nose. The best we can hope for from the Christian right is that they will not vote because they will never vote Democratic.
What, right, and I hope they stay home and never vote again.
And the best way to make sure that happens is to point out the fact that they've been used and lied to and abused and treated like the idiots they are. And point it out as often as possible. Every single time. I have 2 friends here ready to kill me now because I keep pointing it out to them. What have you got for your vote? Name one thing.
Yeah, nothing. Because they can't name one thing. There isn't one thing. Well, the gay, well, I don't know. You're in Texas, Rick, so, I mean, well, the gays can't get married. It's in the Constitution now. We got that.
Well, it was already in law here in Texas, but last election they put it on the ballot anyway to get the idiots out the vote.
Right. So what do you got? I mean, what? No, I mean, ask them. I'd love to. Please report. Tell them to call me and tell me, Rick.
I have done my best. And Roy. Now, Roy, you're going to have to realize this guy. By the way, he is one of the best Texas rodeo men that we have ever seen.
Well, I can tell that Roy is the real deal every time I talk to him.
Roy is the real deal. If I could ride a horse one-third as good as this man, I would be the greatest ever. He is really, really good. But he tries to drag these people in. He tries to get them to call you. He tries to get them to talk to you. But they won't. They absolutely won't.
But why not? I mean, I've been...
They're afraid of the truth.
I'm not mean to anybody, Rick. I'm not mean to anybody at all. I talk to anybody. I have begged. I have done everything but got on my hands and knees and crawled to that godforsaken little hole in Mississippi where the American Family Association the sort of coils up at night, and begged them to come on the show and just explain to me why they want to destroy workers at Ford Motor Company, and they will not do it.
And what is the simple answer to that? Because they can't do it. They can't support their platform. They can't support what they do. They have no rationale behind it. They know their votes are being thrown away. They know they're being treated as idiots. But yet they don't want to admit it because most of these people are lost to begin with.
So are you telling me that they're trying to exercise power for power's sake? The American Family Association was ballyhooing and crowing the other day because CBS... many affiliates of CBS did not run 9/11 documentary until like after 11 o'clock at night. Now, in some instances, these were literally the last words that these people spoke or heard spoken, and they happened to be so-called dirty words. And now the American Family Association sending emails around saying, file a complaint with the FCC because CBS are dirty words.
The reason why they're doing this is because they have had no power in their life. This is the only power they have ever seen or got close to. And although it's an illusion, come on, this is psychological.
I know. That's why I'm asking you.
It doesn't matter if it's an illusion. It is something they are believing in. It's like believing
in an invisible
God.
Okay. But what's this illusion of power, or even if it's real power, what's it do for you? I mean, does it mean that you move from hamburger to steak?
It means you get to do the one thing you always wanted to do in your life. And hamburger and steak doesn't matter. They can starve to death as long as they can tell you where you can go and what you can say. They will live in chains themselves as long as they can tell you what you cannot do. How you can have sex, who you can have sex with, when you can have sex.
Who you can love.
Who you can love. If you're going to have an abortion after your Christian ride daddy has screwed you and got you pregnant, this is it. They don't care. All they want to be able to do is say, I told you, you can't do this. For these people to have been able to get CBS not to show that until later at night, they actually had orgasms at the moment they heard that.
Oh,
forgive me. I get
no. I know you're right. It just
And the worst part about this, these are, you know, they could be okay. Get into therapy, guys.
Yeah. Seek counseling.
It's not.
I mean, is there? I wonder. I mean, there's a 12-step program, and I'm not making light of anything, Rick, because these things do some valuable service for people. There's a 12-step program for booze. There's a 12-step program for food. There's a 12-step program for sex. There's a 12-step program for gambling. Please. I mean, if I have to found it, by God, I will, Rick. There needs to be a 12-step program for religious fundamentalism in this country. I mean,
okay.
I mean, I've been kind of a smart aleck for a while because I refer to myself as a recovering Southern Baptist, and I am.
Gotcha.
But maybe it's not a joke.
Well, here's the thing. You couldn't do it as a 12-step. Maybe rational recovery. But 12-step programs is a fundamental religious movement. All 12-step programs are fundamentalist religious based. And they actually work on alcohol by getting the person addicted to the faith.
So it's just a shift.
It's just a shift. But rational recovery, desensitization, anything you could use. Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to take anybody's faith away. That's not my job. But I want them. I want people to. Oh, I should just stop. Rick.
No, you shouldn't. Here you go, Bob. Here it is. Here's the whole thing. Here's how you know that they are in trouble, psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually. They want to be Christ-like. They want to be a sub-God. They don't want to be a human who's working to do Christ's will or God's will. They want to be Christ-like. Do you understand the deity of that?
Yeah, more than I care to admit. That's.
I don't want to beat up on them.
No, no, no. What you're talking about is the cult of the divine Augustus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I am a Christian, and now I'm God. That was God. I'm sorry. Forgive me. It wasn't Augustus. That was Justinian, I believe.
Yeah, Justinian.
Yeah, Justinian. Okay, I kind of messed up on that. But yes, Augustus. I am Caesar. Therefore, I am God.
Yeah, look at me. I'm Caligula. I had a bad fever, and now I'm a god.
Absolutely. And, yeah, all you people who wanted me to live, yeah, you know, you got to kill yourself because I lived. The thing is, these people are ill.
Well, I had a little bit of correspondence earlier today, Rick. There's a new book out on the globalization of Christian fundamentalism. And the fact that the focus on the family people and such are insinuating themselves into organization, you know, they hate them, but they're insinuating themselves into the United Nations. You know, no condoms for Africa, that kind of thing.
Well, they have to get in it so they can control it. Now, here's something for you.
What happens when they run out of crap to control, Rick?
No. Well, let's just say for argument's sake, and I'll get off in here because I know you're a busy man. Let's say for argument's sake that the Bible, Revelation, is true. And it's really, really going to happen.
Any minute now.
What does it say? What does it say? It says it's going to be people who are fooled. And the beast is going to come out saying that he is Jesus. And he's going to trick people into believing he is. So the people who are going to be persecuting, the people who are going to be doing all these evil things are going to be Christians. Fundamentalist Christians. Christians. Reconstructionist.
Wide is the way.
Think about that for a second. That's another book I was working on, but I gave it away because it scared the heck out of me. I quit it. It was called Really Left Behind, and it's where the Christians are the ones who are in control of everything that happens in Revelation. And that logically...
Yeah, they cause all the nasty stuff.
They have to. I mean, if you go with the Bible, and if you... assume that this is true, it has to be a Christian movement that tricks people into following Satan. It has to be.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it had to be a Christian who started the Holocaust.
Yeah. And, well, anyway, that book got too scary for me, so I trashed it.
I can well understand. Rick, it's so good to hear from you. Always so good to hear from you.
Thanks.
Have yourself a wonderful evening, sir.
You too, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And onward to our good friend Chris. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
What's shaking?
I tell you, I'm all right now, but last week I was in a rough shape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was going through the 12 steps. I had them all laid out. I tripped. I started going in all different directions. I was a recovering Christian. I was messed up. I started molesting the older women in the congregation. I got to be really popular.
You're going to get me in trouble.
I went on the White House tour. Nothing was working out. They said, "Would you please go hang out with the president?" It was terrible. He kept getting his mother to come in, take her teeth out, show me where Martha Washington signed them.
Yes.
It was terrible. He kept telling me about going hunting in Crawford with his buddies, you know,
yeah.
Porterhouse, T-bone, and ribeye, you know, the best shot. And they passed me a note, you know, like on the West Wing, they folded up.
Yeah, yeah.
They passed me the note. It was up to me. I had to do it. Bush, he screamed, he hollered, he kicked out the window in the West Wing. I had to tell him. He could not give Ricky Bobby the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I had to tell him. He was just beside himself. And when I told him the other thing on the note, that a Muslim may get elected in Minnesota. Yeah, oh boy. It was rough.
I tell you, it's tough.
It's tough.
No respect. They got a special cage for you in Guantanamo, Chris.
Do what?
They got a special cage for you in Guantanamo.
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Oh, yeah. It's the no-view suite.
Well, no, I mean, I think that, I don't know. I think that what they're going to do is they're going to put you in a little room where the only thing that can happen is, you know, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Trinity Broadcast Network. Nothing but Benny Hinn for you.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get conjugal visits from Alan Holmes saying, "Really, I'm on your side. Really, really, I got Sean Hannity in my back. Really,
no, oh.
What's he doing back there? He's on my back. What's he doing? I'm on your side." And then it'll be a delegation led by Jesse. We're here to see, what's his name? Who? The white guy. Oh, there's more than one white guy here. Oh, the fat one. The tall fat one. The one from Alabama.
Don't be so rough on yourself, man. I've seen photos of me lately. I'm changing my name to Raymond Burr.
Wait a minute. You've seen photos of you lately?
Yeah, I've seen photos of me lately. There were photos taken in Washington, D.C. that I'm not allowing to be published.
Well, you went to Camp Democracy.
Yes, I did.
Which means you're probably going to get a better suite than me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're in the beautiful wilds of West Virginia.
I get 24 hours a day of the wit and wisdom of George W. Bush.
Well, you know, no one's talking about this. The biggest campaign item in this big midterm elections.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of Blue Cross? It's not going to be Blue Cross anymore.
No,
it's going to be Red Double Cross.
Ooh, Double Cross.
Red Double Cross,
yeah. Well, you know,
they're not going to call it Blue Cross and Blue Shield anymore.
Nah, it's just one big red double cross.
That's right. Yeah.
So it almost sounds like a football play.
You know, I'm not gonna touch that one.
No, I knew you wouldn't. See, I won't do to you what you do to me. Hey, Chris, brother, take it easy. Have a good evening. All right.
All right. You too, buddy.
Later. Okay, just in case you were wondering, I mentioned this earlier. This is straight out of the Washington Post. Page A5. President Bush said yesterday, this is out of today's edition, President Bush said yesterday that he senses a third awakening of religious devotion in the United States that has coincided with the nation's struggle with international terrorists, a war that he's depicted as a confrontation between good and evil. He told a group of conservative journalists, now these guys are on the payroll, in other words, that he notices more open expressions of faith among people he meets during his travels, and he suggested that might signal a broader revival similar to... No, he... And then it goes on to... The first Great Awakening refers to a wave of Christian fervor in the American colonies from about 1730 to 1760, another one from 1810 to 1830. Some scholars and writers have debated for years whether a third awakening has been taking place. Yeah, George is sitting around eating pretzels and... Carl, you reckon we're in the middle of the third awakening? I think... Carl, I don't know. I disagree. I think this could be the third awakening. You know, we've been waiting for a third... You know, them Muslims, they're waiting for their 12th imam. We're waiting for the third awakening. You know, because 3 is a magic number. Nah, I don't think so. He's drawing a parallel in terms of a resurgence in dangerous times of people going back to their religion, said one aide who spoke on the condition of anonymity because the session was not open to other journalists. This is not God is on our side or anything like that. Why do you have to add something like that? This isn't God is on our side or anything like that. You know, because we know how the liberal media will spin it. White House did not release a transcript of Bush's remarks. But National Review posted highlights on its website. On another topic, Bush rejected sending more troops to the Afghanistan-Pakistan border areas to find Osama bin Laden. 100,000 troops there in Pakistan is not the answer. It's someone saying, guess what? And then the kinetic action begins. I don't know how many Pittsburgh Steelers fans there are in the audience. But the great heyday of Pittsburgh football broadcasting featured a color commentator, recently retired, named Myron Cope. Myron was Pittsburgh's own little Howard Cosell. And he just made these weird noises during the broadcast. And that's And frankly, that just I just flashed on Myron Cope the minute I read 100,000 troops there in Pakistan is not the answer. It's someone saying, guess what? And then the kinetic action begins. Hmm-ha! Then the kinetic now look, help me here. Okay, please? I'm not monkeying with the text. I'm not doing anything to... I'm going to read it straight. And I want you to... I want you to tell me how this works. Tell me if this makes any... I mean, this is written by someone named Peter Baker at the Washington Post, who, you know, probably goes home, loves his family, that kind of stuff, gets paid. Three paragraphs. Bush has been careful discussing the battle with terrorists in religious terms since he had to apologize for using the word crusade in 2001. He often stresses that the war is not against Islam, but against those who corrupt it. In his comments yesterday, aides said Bush was not casting the war as a religious struggle, but was describing American cultural changes in a time of war. Quote, he's drawing a parallel in terms of a resurgence in dangerous times of people going back to their religion, unquote, said one aide who spoke on the condition of anonymity because the session was not open to other journalists. Quote, this is not God is on our side or anything like that, unquote. The White House did not release a transcript of Bush remarks, but National Review posted highlights on its website. On another topic, Bush rejected sending more troops to the Afghanistan-Pakistan border areas to find Osama bin Laden. Quote, 100,000 troops there in Pakistan is not the answer. It's someone saying, guess what? And then the kinetic action begins, he said, meaning an informer disclosing bin Laden's location. That was my head. That was the microphone. Can somebody, please, can somebody help me with this? Because I can't make it. Lots of public education, and maybe that's the failing. I can't make this work. 100,000 troops there in Pakistan is not the answer. It's someone saying, guess what? And then the kinetic action begins. Who told that? Who? Hooty hoot, Sergeant Carter. Who told George Bush about kinetic action? Is this the same goober that gave him asymmetrical warfare? What language are they speaking at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? If what he means that he's waiting for somebody to rat bin Laden out, then say, well, what we're doing is we're waiting for somebody to turn turtle and drop the dime on Osama bin Laden. That sounds like George Bush. 100,000 troops there in Pakistan is not the answer. It's someone saying, guess what? And then the kinetic action begins. And this poor journalist has to explain that what that mixed up, muddled up, gobbly means is that he's talking about somebody dropping the dime on Osama. Something doesn't smell right. Well, surprise, surprise, surprise. Something doesn't smell right in something that George Bush has said. And then the kinetic action begins. Who's feeding him this crap? Is there anybody in America who opens the Washington Post to page A05 today and reads Bush tells group he sees a third awakening by Peter Baker and gets down to that final paragraph and says, oh, no, kinetic action. Well, you know, I think the president's got it this time. No. No. Yeah, that's when the kinetic action begins, I imagine we'll see some ratcheting up of asymmetrical warfare on the Pakistani border. You know, just last week, I had the story about the fact that the Pakistanis have surrendered to the Taliban. The Pakistani armor, the Pakistani infantry, the Pakistani Quartermaster Corps has withdrawn from the tribal regions of the lawless highlands on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. They quit. They've gone. It's over. They're done. So if it's not going to be 100, you know, somebody, okay, then guess what? And then the kinetic action begins. But we ain't got any troops there to deal with the kinetic action, George. Dang it. Let's check out the news, then we'll be back. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob. There was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gather around and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard, we go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows, to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man.
This is a quality news network. NATO hasn't received any offers from any of the 26 member nations for additional troops in Afghanistan after yesterday's request by its top commander. He says 2,500 additional troops are needed, as well as helicopters and transport aircraft. A NATO defense ministers meeting will be held later this month. In Iraq today, nearly 40 people were killed in scattered violence, and the bodies of 65 men have been discovered throughout Baghdad. Some of the victims were Sunni, others Shiite. The U.S. military is also reporting the deaths of 3 more U.S. soldiers. In Gaza today, the Palestinian cabinet resigned to make way for a new coalition government, but the European Union says it will not restore ties with Hamas until it renounces violence, recognizes Israel, and abides by previous peace deals. A planned meeting between an EU official and Iran's top nuclear negotiator for tomorrow has been scrapped with no explanation. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will travel to New York next week, where she's expected to push for sanctions against Tehran. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad continues to insist the uranium enrichment program is for peaceful purposes. He's remained defiant to world demands that the program be halted. On Capitol Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved a bill to have the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court review the domestic spying program. Democrats are expected to derail the measure when the full Senate addresses it next week. In Washington, a Senate committee is ready to move ahead with a bill that rivals one backed by the Armed Services Committee today. That one authorizes military tribunals for suspected terrorists and includes a provision that prevents defendants from accessing certain evidence. But the rival bill lacks many of the provisions the Bush administration wants. Rhode Island's Lincoln Chafee, the only Republican senator who voted against the Iraq War, has defeated a conservative opponent in that state's GOP primary. Minnesota State Legislator Keith Ellison won the Democratic nomination for an open House seat. If he wins in November, he'll be the first Muslim in Congress. In Arizona, conservative Randy Graff won the GOP primary for a House seat. And New York's Hillary Rodham Clinton easily won her bid for renomination. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Today, scientists announced a discovery of the most distant galaxy ever found. IOK-1 is 13 billion light-years away and is thought to have come into being shortly after the Big Bang. A federal government is considering a proposal that would cut by 95% the critical habitat for the threatened seabird, the marbled murrelet, in Washington, Oregon, and California. Officials say the bird is already protected by other state and federal management plans. Australia is investigating a man who sent more than 2 billion Viagra advertisements in 1 year, violating the country's strict anti-spam laws. If convicted, the man faces prison. A top Saudi oil executive says only 18% of the global supply of crude oil has been tapped and is encouraging further exploration. His comments came during an OPEC meeting in Vienna. Nigerian oil unions started a 3-day strike today in a bid for better security that comes after scattered violence, including kidnappings and killings. The world's first hydrogen-burning car will be produced by BMW early next year. And foreclosures are up in the U.S. More than 115,000 homes went into foreclosure last month, 53% higher than a year ago. Light sweet crude settled today at $64.12. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 45 points, NASDAQ up 12 points, S&P 500 up 5 points. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Alrighty then, we got another, well, a little less than an hour to go. I'm looking forward to it. These nights save me. I hope you understand that. Little lesson from the English department real quick. A transition sentence is a sentence that that goes from one topic to the next and literally creates the transition between the two sentences. And things like, George Bush is a doofus. On the other hand, George Bush is also evil. The transitional phrase there would be on the other hand. Okay? Like that. 6.5 minutes after the hour, and I want to, like I said, the stack is big, the stack is thick tonight. Now, I mentioned in an earlier conversation with our good friend Luke, this business up in Michigan, where a Republican operative has been hired to do fun outreach activities for young conservatives. Come on down in Michigan. We're going to play fun with guns and take BB guns and paintball guns and shoot cutouts of Nancy Pelosi and Howard Dean and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry. Now, I don't know if you get a scope with all of this. Yeah, if they want to make it really fun, they can get about 6 stories up in a building and have a moving open-topped vehicle driving along and see if they can really get close. I despise these people. Now, Howard Dean fired off a letter. Dear, Howard Dean fired off a letter to chinless Ken Melman. Dear Ken, A troubling article today reported that the Republican National Committee hired intern is planning events that can only be described as divisive, potentially dangerous, and discriminatory to promote the Republican Party's agenda at the University of Michigan. Promoting Catch an Illegal Immigrant Day, which has been used by the Republican Party in other states, including Pennsylvania and Texas, yeah, I got that here too, is not only offensive, it promotes discrimination for political gain, and an event titled Fun with Guns that encourages young Republicans to shoot cardboard cutouts of Democratic leaders further promotes intolerance and violence. These un-American activities cannot go unchallenged. Meanwhile, Chinless Ken, who lives in his little log closet, is...
we think it's funny. It's funny. It's funny when we get to shoot pictures of Hillary, because, when you know, we go to sleep every night dreaming about doing the real thing, because that's how we are, because we're Republicans. We're killers. We start wars against countries that have never done a damn thing to us. That's what we are. We kill. We are death walking. We are the Republican National Committee. Shut up, Howard Dean. You and worrying about people shooting at pictures. Baby, it's called target practice for a reason.
You know, you will recall that the only real assassinations that have taken place in recent history have been liberals, progressives, Democrats, Martin, Bobby, John.
Oh, wait a minute. They tried to kill Reagan.
That dude was insane. The people who killed Martin, Bobby, and John were as sane can be. You know, that's how it goes. So they're out there. And but, you know, why am I surprised? What was it, 2 years ago? I've mentioned this before. 2 years ago that the young Republicans have their little convention and they brag about, well, you know, we wanted that Minnesota Senate seat and we had to kill Paul Wellstone to do it, but we got it. They say this kind of stuff. And then they turn, you know, and I read it. This is the part that just makes me nuts, because I read from otherwise decent Democrat, you know, we need to become more moderate. The political discourse in this country has just become poisonous. It's terrible. Moderates need to rule the day. Moderation is what will save America. They're going to slit your moderate throats. And they're going to do it. Between now and November, they're going to do everything humanly possible within their power to turn you against your neighbors. I thought it was brilliant, brilliant the other night when Keith Olbermann, in advance of Dear Leader's speech, when Keith Olbermann referenced that classic Twilight Zone episode called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. Because the fact of the matter is, the monsters live on Maple Street, and Oak Street, and Cherry Street, and Main Street, all over this country, and they are registered Republicans. And they mean you no good. And at the very best, they are so butt-ignorant that they don't realize that they're being used as shock troops in the culture wars. So why am I surprised to see that the Republican National Committee, that their idea of outreach to create more young conservatives is to give some kid whose parents are members of a militia movement in the upper peninsula of Michigan or somewhere the opportunity to take pot shots at a Hillary Clinton cutout? Why am I? I'm not surprised. And then this. Because these are two peas in the same filthy pod. Associated Press, Dateline Washington. Non-lethal weapons such as high-power microwave devices should be used on American citizens in crowd control situations before being used on the battlefield, the Air Force Secretary said Tuesday. No, this isn't that crazy-ass the General Jerry Boykin. You know, I could tell that we were going to win because our God was bigger than their God. No, this isn't that guy. This is the Secretary of the doggone Air Force. Well, I believe we should use our new non-lethal microwave pacemaker stopping weapons on American citizens just to make sure it's okay before we go use it on brown people somewhere outside the territorial confines of the United States, or maybe do it at Guantanamo. Boom. This is real. The Secretary of the Air Force sat down, stone cold sober, and said, you know, you're going to have some unruly mobs here in the United States, and before we go using them outside the territorial confines of the United States, because if it turned out there was a problem and it actually did kill people, if we killed people outside the United States, they'd say we were barbarians, so we got to try it on Americans first. If we're not willing to use it here against our fellow citizens, listen to this. This is General Buck Turgidson. Well, General, could he actually make it in on a wounded plane and drop the bomb in Russia? Oh, baby, if he gets in that thing and he flies it really low and he manages his fuel, you betcha he can hit his target. We're being ruled. We are being ruled by people who didn't realize that Dr. Strangelove was supposed to be funny. And it ain't funny anymore, is it? If we're not willing to use it here against our fellow citizens, then we should not be willing to use it in a wartime situation, said Wynn. Because if I hit somebody with a non-lethal weapon, and they claim it injured them in a way that was not intended, I think I would be vilified in world press. That's right, he says I would be vilified, because it's about him. It's not about the people whose guts you're roasting, because you turned the microwave wave weapon up from popcorn to prime rib! Jiminy! And look at that language. If I hit somebody with a non-lethal weapon and they claim that it injured them in a way that was not intended, because he's admitting right there that with these so-called non-lethal weapons, he damned well intends to injure people. And he does not care if he kills them. And guess where it... Now back up. Because, it's America. They'd never really do that. This is water cannons for the Bull Connors of the 21st daggum century, you understand? That's what this is. Now, who are they going to use it on? Well, maybe they'll use it on the Kumbaya crowd who's sitting there. Yeah, we're going to... Yeah, sure. No, you know who they're going to, use this on? They're going to use this the next time a strike gets a little bit ugly. The next time somebody tells you that the war in Iraq is not a labor issue, or the next time you hear something like that, you think about General Wynn from the Air Force, who is readying non-lethal crowd control devices to be used on the next bunch of pissed-off workers who decide the Air Force decides has done got a little too uppity for their own good. Oh, sure. I mean, the obvious thing is that, that if there's a global trade talk or something, Seattle, 1990, whatever, that they'd take it there and they'd roast and toast. You know, you can't see the waves, you can't feel the waves, but all of a sudden you just begin to burn. And your skin begins to blister and crackle. Yeah, those are the obvious targets, but you know what? This is going to be too damned handy. And you know what? There will be Homeland Security grants to allow every law enforcement agency in the United States to buy these monstrous weapons. And they will be bought to be used on your fellow Americans. And they will be used on, let's say your company, your corporation goes bankrupt, steals your pension, cuts off your health care, and throws you out the door after 35 years of loyal service and says, tough. And you bother, and you stand up with a sign and you protest because you're a worker, and it's just about the only thing you got left to you in the United States, and you stand up and you protest, and they turn that hell weapon on you, and they fry your insides. I don't know, maybe you had a pacemaker implanted, maybe you're a retiree who's had his pension robbed from him, and you show up, and they turn the microwave on you, and you die! Well, if we didn't do it to Americans first, I think I would be vilified in the world press. You go straight to hell, General Wynn. You go there in a hurry. This is the debate that we're going to have in 2006 before the election. This is how it gets ugly. This is how it gets ugly in an awful big hurry. Sit down. Think about it. This is what they're talking about doing to us.
The Air Force has paid for research into non-lethal weapons, but he said the service is unlikely to spend more money on development until injury problems are reviewed by medical experts and resolved.
That means people die. That means they kill people with this.
Non-lethal weapons generally can weaken people if they are hit with the beam. Some of the weapons can emit short, intense energy pulses that also can be effective in disabling some electronic devices,
like pacemakers!
On another subject, General Wynn said he expects to choose a new contractor for the next generation of aerial refueling tankers by next summer.
So, you know, okay, let's get this business about frying people with our portable our portable microwave devices out of the way, because we need to talk about a new fleet of tankers. You know, but I really think we need to use it on some strikers first. That's what I think we need to. Boy, if only they'd had that at Sago in January, huh? They could have neutralized those pissed off, grieving miners' families in a hurry, couldn't they? Sure, they could have. Let's go to the phones. Peter joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, good to talk to you.
Good evening, Bob. Good to talk to you. What do you bet the next version of the Left Behind series game is going to have one of those in there?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and these things are vehicle-mounted, Peter.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
I saw the article today. I was horrified.
Yeah, you you drive them up, and they make the science fiction noises, I guess. You know, but they're vehicle-mounted, and everybody falls down.
Yeah, the next version will be handheld, and they'll use them on prisoners who are confined to their cells who won't get up and bend over or whatever the hell that...
Well, that's a great way... Hey, good thinking. That's a great way of testing it, Peter.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, the only thing lower than, I guess, prisoners and Al-Qaeda is the liberals in the free speech zone. So.
Well, wait a second. Homosexual liberals in free speech zones. Homosexual atheists, liberals in free speech zones.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's a sick world. Bob, I just wanted to share a news article that nobody will ever hear about it unless I tell you all here. It's one of those that will never, ever get covered by the mainstream. And a fellow named Tyrone Garner died. He died Monday. He was in a hospital in Houston, Texas. He died of meningitis. And you say Tyrone Garner. Who was Tyrone Garner? Well, Tyrone Garner was one of the two men in 1998 who was arrested when the police burst into the bedroom in Texas and caught them having homosexual sex, and the Supreme Court decision struck down the sodomy law in Texas. Tyrone was one of those guys that was a police burst in on that night. And Tyrone's been in the care of his brother for the last 6 months or so, but in case that he finally passed away. And Tyrone was a very simple man. He sold barbecue from a cart on the streets of Houston, and of course he was highly embarrassed to be outed that way and the police bursting in and what have you. But there's something new when I read this article I didn't realize, and that was Tyrone is a black man, and his partner, who he was discovered with, police burst in, whose name John Lawrence, is a white man.
Oh, yeah, that's a white guy. It all becomes so clear now, doesn't it?
Can't you just see those redneck cops? Now, these cops were responding to what they claim was a burglary call, and that's why they kicked in the, who knows what the story is on that. But don't you just, Lord, we can't have them black queers raping our white queers.
Where the white homos at?
Oh, Jesus, I was just horrified when I could not believe it. So, anyway, Tyrone passed away, that's really what started this whole, that might have been the beginning of this third.
Well, you know, we had to kick the door down because we heard two men making loud noises, and that certainly couldn't have been sex.
Well, the law that they violated was, it's called the Texas Homosexual Conduct Law.
There's a code of conduct now?
Apparently so.
I mean, is this where you find, like, the monogram towel requirements?
Well, it specifically bans everything two men can do together in bed. Apparently, at least.
Except change the engine in a 66 Rambler.
Ha ha! Oh, that's so funny. I was working on a computer monitor on my bed today. My bed sees a lot of action, but it's all.
But it's all cyber.
Yeah, exactly. I've always got something taken apart.
There's nothing involving a 900 number, is there? Here,
no,
Peter?
No.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to share that tidbit with you. Nobody will ever tell you that, so I thought I'd share that with you.
Well, you know, God, or whatever people choose to believe in, rest his soul. Because,
yeah.
Because the government of the state of Texas took him through hell.
Oh, yeah, they were both arrested and carted off to jail, and, you know, it couldn't have been a good experience. So, anyway, we're missing somebody who's been through hell, and it's like we were talking, somebody said this a few weeks ago, and Chad and I adopted the phrase, and that is that conservatives are afraid of going to hell, and liberals have already been there.
And because we've lived with conservatives.
Exactly.
Well, well, Bishop Pearson, I keep going back to our conversation with him because he said so very many wonderful things.
Oh, right.
And one of them was that, you know, he said, this is a big business we're in. We're selling tickets into heaven and out of hell. And it's a high-dollar business.
High dollar. That's right. That's like selling them mobile homes.
Yeah, it's a growth industry.
That's right. Oh, man. Well, that's all I had to
say. It's so good to hear from you.
The callers tonight are amazing. Dude, the guy from Texas, what was his name?
No, that's our good friend. That's our psychologist. He's our staff psychologist, Rick Goodner.
Well, dude, I need an hour with him over the phone. I've got issues.
Why do you think I keep inviting him to call? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, kid, the first one's free.
Oh, the Head-On Radio Recovery Network.
Yeah, that's it, you know. it's like the old Saturday Night Live thing. It's a floor cleaner. It's a dessert topping. It's a radio network. It's a support group.
Call now.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm so glad you're on the air. I love you guys, and hugs to Agnes and the kitty cat that Nanette heard in the background.
Yeah, well, she's back here with the children, so. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll probably have a little chorus here in another week or so.
Okay.
Oh, Lord, we can't win. Peter, take care. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Bye now. Sarge has been holding on forever and a day. Let's go straight to Sarge. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Oh, you're welcome, Bob. I hadn't been hanging on very long, pal.
I hate to keep people waiting. I know you were waiting while I was losing my mind over the microwave crowd control weapon.
Well, you must be one of them darn liberal folk.
That would be me.
Hey, listen, I wanted to tell you something. I told Guy James about it earlier, and I'll tell you. You know, Sunday, one of our P&M correspondents was arrested at Cap Democracy.
Really?
Yes, he was in his hotel room, and he got a knock on the door. He had heard some shooting outside, and he got a knock on the door and opened it, and it was the police. And they arrested him. They took two of his cameras. He has not had them returned as of yet. They held him for 48 hours without any charge. He had his computer memory cleaned out. They took the pictures that he had taken, and just whatever happened to them, who knows, because they hadn't returned those either.
Well, what's the backstory on this, Sarge? What in heaven's name happened?
I have no idea. He was sitting in his hotel room in the PowersandMorrison.com chat room, and that's when they knocked on the door. He had left Camp Democracy and gone to the hotel room, and from what I understand, had done absolutely nothing but take some pictures and done some interviews.
Dear God,
here we go again. He is a black man.
Oh, well.
It's Dre.
Real Dre. Our buddy.
Right. And it was him. And, of course, we've been following this guy in California. Cody has been following it. I believe his last name is Wolf, who was found guilty. And all he was doing in court, and what he was doing was he was covering a topic that made the government mad. So, I mean, Bob, this thing's going crazy, buddy.
and it's going. I have to reiterate, Sarge, it is only going to get nastier.
I know, and I found out in between calls from them, but they have gone back and gotten student loans, and they're getting information off of them, and then when they finish, they're throwing the information into these private companies. And I got a call from one of them myself, and they asked me a bunch of questions, and I told them, I'm sorry, I don't talk to fascists, and I hung up on them.
Attaboy.
But, they're coming by Powers and Morrison all the time. I catch them on the site, stats and all of this. So, yeah, if you tell the truth, they're going to harass you. They are going to harass you, and that's why... that's the problem with Greg. You know, they were just harassing Greg.
Sure, Greg Palast got roughed up, got rousted, and the fact of the matter is, it's last night the forum. I was talking with our friend David in Tennessee. The forum last night in Institute West Virginia, and I don't want. I'm not trying to cast stones on that wonderful, wonderful event because it was fascinating. It was informative. It was vitally necessary. And I am convinced to the heart of the matter that somewhere in that crowd was somebody who was taking notes because he'd been sent there by Homeland Security or the Homeland Security Detachment of the Kanawha County Sheriff's Office or the FBI, because we know from ACLU disclosures about events in Pittsburgh and Atlanta, Greensboro, North Carolina, that every time there's anything that looks like dissent gathered in the United States now, Sarge, there will be a rat there.
Now, let me remember now. They hate us because of our freedoms, right?
Okay. See what you do? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, I'm going to let you go. Appreciate it, and we'll talk at you later, buddy.
All right, you take care, Sarge.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Sarge from powersandmorrison.com, also from the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, who is living in the screw-up that is the Bush response to Katrina. God. They rousted a guy for taking pictures and, you know, somewhere in the Pauline stuff in the New Testament, maybe it's in Romans. And I remember this because I recently saw the Armor of God pajamas that look like little Klan uniforms for children. There's this verse about girding yourself up with the armor of God. You know what? All we have is the armor of truth. And we can bind ourselves up in facts and try to make a point of understanding the law at least a little bit, while in the midst of it all, they're changing it on us. That's all the armor we've got is truth and an absolute commitment to this constitutional form of government that is under attack every minute of every day. I read the Air Force story, and I couldn't help it. I immediately saw the protests that have taken place outside of Massey Energy compounds. Protests at Marsh Fork Elementary. And I immediately realized that if this creep, this Secretary of the Air Force creep, wants to test this on American citizens, the first place they'll look is at people who are inclined to petition for redress of grievances within their First Amendment rights and to gather and to protest unfair, unjust, illegal policies, whether it be outside a Massey Energy site or at a job site where people aren't being paid proper wages. The first people that they're going to test this on, the first people they are going to test this heinous weapon on, will be working people. And odds are they will be members of organized labor. And that is something we had better be ready for. This is the Head On Radio Network. We'll take a break and come back. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. After a strike, a lockout, and a heated labor dispute running for nearly 2 years, hotel workers in San Francisco have reached a tentative agreement with their employers. More than 4,000 workers from 14 hotels are represented by Unite Here, who has been meeting with hotel management daily for 2 weeks straight. The hotels reportedly dropped an attempt to split employee benefits into two tiers, one of the major sticking points for the workers. Last month, the workers had voted in favor of a strike action if a contract agreement could not be reached. Striking mechanics at Northwest Airlines get some good news. Jesse Russell reports.
Last year, a Minnesota unemployment law judge ruled that Northwest mechanics, represented by the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association, were ineligible to receive unemployment benefits. Those workers received some positive news on Tuesday when a Minnesota appeals court judge said that ruling was wrong and that the 25% pay cuts imposed on the workers by the airline constitute a lockout. The union still considers itself on strike, even though Northwest has kept the airline flying with replacement workers. Many of the 1,600 workers who have not taken part or full-time jobs will receive more than $13,000 in benefits.
Detroit teachers have voted to end their strike after more than 2 weeks of resistance to concessions demanded by the school district. Defying a court injunction, the teachers stayed on strike until their union, the Detroit Federation of Teachers, reached a tentative agreement. The school district wanted a 5.5% pay cut over 2 years. The teachers wanted a raise after going for years without one. The new contract calls for a one-year wage freeze, followed by a 1% raise the second year and a 2.5% raise in the third. Teachers also agreed to pay 10% of their health care costs. Teachers voted to return to classrooms today in Detroit, while a contract ratification vote is held. The IRS continues to move ahead with a plan to privatize tax debt collection despite opposition from the National Treasury Employees Union and from some members of Congress. Senator Byron Dorgan has introduced legislation that would prevent the IRS from using private companies to go after tax debts. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says the plan to privatize tax debt collection is unwise and costly, and it compromises the personal information of thousands of taxpayers. Senator Dorgan says the plan will cost up to 24% of the money collected when IRS employees can collect the debts for 3 cents on the dollar.
Here is today's economic report. The world economy could be closer to a crash than many people think, and fingers are pointing at the United States. The International Monetary Fund warned on Tuesday that a number of threats could destabilize the world market. Threats include a surge in inflation, a unraveling of trade imbalances with the U.S. and China, rebounding oil prices with increasing geopolitical tension in the Middle East, and a mutation of the avian flu virus.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you didn't listen to my last show, here's what you missed.
He knew enough to not go under oath because he knew enough that could have gotten him into trouble. Instead, he had an interview with the 9/11 Commission. They were stonewalling the 9/11 Commission. Why? Why would they do that? Why wouldn't they be up front and talk about exactly what happened? Why? Because they had something to hide. Now you tell me what you think it might be. You tell me what you think they might have had to hide. Only someone who has something to hide will try to avoid talking, right? Only someone who has something to hide will try to keep from being sworn in under oath. 3,000 people dead, and he couldn't bring himself to lay his hand on the freaking Bible and have himself sworn in to give a sworn deposition. Thugs, I tell you. Complete thugs.
Tune into my show 5 to 7 Eastern on the Head On Radio Network and radiopower.org.
Someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares. Your own personal.
A couple more news stories for you, and then we'll jump right back to the phones. Just because these deserve to be out there. See, I'm such a Luddite. I still work from paper. I can't. I mean, I got to have the computer here, but I got to have paper. from Michael Chertoff, Skeletor, Homeland Security Secretary Skeletor? Michael Chertoff said yesterday that Congress and the American public must accept that the government cannot protect every possible target against attack if it... Oh, my goodness. Every one of these paragraphs I start through, you know, I pre-read this stuff, and but I don't do it. I just sit there and I look at it, and I don't read it out loud, and I realize how just atrocious it is when you actually put voice to it. Congress and the American public must accept that the government cannot protect every possible target against attack if it wants to avoid fulfilling Al-Qaeda's goal of bankrupting the nation, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff told a Senate committee Tuesday. Oof. So now, let's see. They told us in 2004 that we were going to get hit by Al Qaeda again if, in fact, we elected that pinko commie rat John Kerry. Right? But now they're telling, well, you know, we can't protect you. I'm sorry. We told you we'd protect you, but we can't protect you because we'd go broke. Well, maybe we wouldn't go broke if we still had a surplus, but we know where the surplus went, don't we? The surplus went to the top 0.1% of the you know the answer. So wait a minute. Oh, there's six. Yeah. So in other words, what Secretary Skeletor is telling us is that if we protect our ports, if we protect our nuclear facilities, if we protect our chemical plants, if we protect our refineries. You know, against real terrorists, not Greg Palast. If we do all that, then Al-Qaeda wins because we'll go bankrupt doing it. You know, I got nothing for these sleazebags anymore. I got nothing for them because these are the same creeps who turned Jerry Bremer loose in Baghdad with $9 billion in cash. Shrink wrapped in plastic. People from Custer Battles literally played football in the Baghdad airport tarmacs, using the wads. They called them footballs of money, as footballs. Talk about, man! I remember being in seventh grade and playing paper football. You know how you fold up a piece of notebook into a triangle and. And you kick field goals and with the thumbs and you make the goal. Talk about paper football. But, yeah, so now, you know, it would be, you know, it's just too expensive to guard against terrorism. I guess this is a running theme for tonight's prayer meeting edition. The running theme tonight is what? It's only going to get uglier. That's tonight's running theme. It's only going to get uglier. And this is proof positive of it. Well, you know, we're probably going to get hit someday because, you know, we can't afford to protect everything. So let me see if I've got this straight. We can take ordinary, everyday American citizens and make them practically have to show up at the airport in a Speedo and flip-flops and throw away their denture paste. But we can't afford to make sure that our container ports are safe against somebody who might put something really nasty in a container, say in Kuala Lumpur, and send it over here. We can't do that. But we are up. I mean, we have got it down stone cold. We have stopped the terror potential of people carrying bottles of KY jelly. You know, I mean, I understand, Secretary Chertoff. You know, it's one step at a time. We got to do a little bit every day. Osama bin Laden, Mr. Chertoff said, has made it clear. Really? Really? I didn't get the memo. Osama bin Laden, Mr. Chertoff said, has made it clear that scaring the United States, Halloween's on the way, scaring the United States into an unsustainable spending spree. Death to America. Go shopping. Wait a minute. That's what, dear? Is he mistaking Osama bin Laden and George Bush? Or are we having some reality problems? But wasn't it right after September the 11th, 2001, that Dear leader stood on the pile of rubble. I'm sorry, the stupid guy stood on the pile of rubble with homage to our D.C. cabbie. The stupid guy stood on the pile of rubble and said, a real American in the face of this monumental tragedy will get on a plane and fly to Disney World. Go shopping. Enjoy America. Travel. Go shopping. So, Mr. Chertoff said, has made it clear that that scaring the United States into an unsustainable spending spree is one of his aims. In a 2004 video, Mr. Bin Laden, the Al-Qaeda leader, spoke of bleeding America to the point of bankruptcy. Quote, he understood that the one tool he had in waging war against the United States was to drive us crazy into bankruptcy, trying to defend ourselves against every conceivable threat. We have to be realistic about what we expect and what we do. We do have limits and we do have choices to make. Yeah, we had choices to make, Mike! We had choices to make, and we made them too, by God! We chose to give a tax cut to people who didn't need one. And now you need money to try to... But you're incompetent. You are incompetent, you squirrely-looking... You're incompetent. And you are covering your brownie tracks by saying that you don't have enough money to do your job. Quit with the excuses. I tell you, I'm a nice guy. I'll take your stinking job at half pay and do it five times as well as you're doing it, you dirtbag. Okay? Because I believe in my country. Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago Number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
And this is to make sure that you ratchet it up just another little notch. You're not safe anywhere. Nowhere is safe for you. You're not safe in your homes. Your children aren't safe in their schools. You're not safe if you work at a refinery, at a nuclear plant, at a chemical factory, a paint factory, a brick factory. You are not safe. You cannot be safe. But we're doing the best we can, but we can't go on a spending spree. Jesus, he makes it sound like national security is Mrs. Thurston Howell III turned loose in sacks. I'm sick of it. I'm sick to daggum death of it. Please, can we get somebody in there that can do the daggum job, that wants to do the daggum job? Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Gerard. Welcome to the program, Gerard. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob. I the other night played a piece by Annie DeFranco.
Yes, called Self-Evident.
In the last couple of days, I don't know, we're thinking about September 11th. And since it is prayer meeting night, I came up with a poem here. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read it.
Go right ahead.
It's a few paragraphs, but I'll try to get through it quickly. It's called Alabanza in Praise of Local 100.
Okay.
It comes from a book called Poets Against the War. It's written by Martin Espada from Amherst, Massachusetts. I'll just read it. And
yeah, go right ahead.
Maybe comment if I have time. But, Alabanza. This is for the 43 members of hotel employees and restaurant employees, Local 100, working at the windows on the World Restaurant, who lost their lives in the attack on the World Trade Center. Alabanza, praise the cook with a shaven head and a tattoo on his shoulder that said, Oye, and a blue-eyed Puerto Rican with people from Fajardo, the harbor of pirates centuries ago. Praise the lighthouse in Fajardo, candle glimmering white to worship the dark saints of the sea. Alabanza, praise the cook's yellow pirate's cap worn in the name of Roberto Clemente, plane that flamed into the ocean loaded with cans for Nicaragua, for all the mouths chewing the ash of earthquakes. Alabanza, praise the kitchen radio, dial clicked even before the dial on the oven, so that music and Spanish rose before bread. Praise the bread. Alabanza. Praise Manhattan from 107 flights up, like Atlantis glimpsed through the windows of an ancient aquarium. Praise the great windows where immigrants from the kitchen could squint and almost see their world. Hear the chant of the nation. Ecuador, Mexico, Republica Dominicana, Haiti, Yemen, Ghana, Bangladesh. Alabanza. Praise the kitchen in the morning where the gas burned blue on every stove and exhaust fans fired their diminutive propeller. Hands cracked eggs with quick thumbs or sliced open cartons to build an altar of cans. Alabanza. Praise the busboy's music, the chime-chime of his dishes and the silverware in the tub. Alabanza. Praise the dish dog, the dishwasher, who worked that morning because another dishwasher could not stop coughing, or because he needed overtime to pile the sacks of rice and beans for a family floating away on some Caribbean island plagued by frogs. Alabanza. Praise the waitress who heard the radio in the kitchen and sang to herself about a man gone. Alabanza. After the thunder, wilder than thunder, after the shutter deep in the glass of the great windows, after the radio stopped singing like a tree full of terrified frogs, after night burst the dam of day and flooded the kitchen, for a time the stoves glowed in darkness like the lighthouse in Fajardo, like a cook's soul. Soul, I say, even if the dead cannot tell us about the bristles of God's beard because God has no face. Soul, I say, to name the smoke beams flung in constellations across the night sky of the city and cities to come. Alabanza, I say, even if God has no face. Alabanza, when the war began, from Manhattan and Kabul, two constellations of smoke rose and drifted to each other, mingling in icy air, and one said with an Afghan tongue, teach me to dance, we have no music here, and the other said with a Spanish tongue, I will teach you, music is all we need.
Jesus, that's good.
And I can remember on September 11th watching the coverage on TV and how they were talking about all the people, not to slight their families or those people in the least, but they were talking about people who worked at Dean Witter, and they were talking about people who worked for all the financial giants in the world. But nobody really talked about people like people from Local 100.
No.
You know, and...
And the cops and firefighters and Port Authority people, nobody mentions, Gerard, that those were all union members. Nobody mentions that the people whose lungs bleed now when they try to breathe because they got in there, the only thing they could think about was trying to find survivors. They thought nothing of themselves, Gerard. They got in there and they started cleaning up, and the Bush administration said, go ahead, it's safe. And their lungs bleed every day now. Those were, you know, those were organized, that was organized labor. Those were people looking out for their brothers and sisters more than they were willing to look out for themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny to talk to this guy from the Air Force, you know, just one of the reasons we went to Iraq was because Saddam used weapons on his own people.
Yeah, kinda.
I guess if he had
used non-lethal weapons on his own people, if he'd only used tear gas and not if he'd only used tear gas instead of the stuff that the Bush family sold him, then you know we wouldn't have invaded. You know, but we all know that's a lie. That George Bush was going to invade Iraq one way or the other because there's sick psychology at work there, Gerard. I mean, this is stuff that goes back to potty training that I don't even want to think about.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to pass along. I was really impressed by Keith Olbermann's piece on Monday.
That took guts.
Yeah. And I remember reading this point. I've had this book since right after 9/11, and I just remembered this poem.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us. And again, who's the author?
Martin Estrada.
Martin Estrada?
Estrada, Espada.
Espada. Alabanza.
Uh huh.
I'm gonna go and see if I can find it. We got to roll. We're at the end of it, Gerard. Thank you for putting a nice rounding it out nicely tonight.
Okay.
You take care.
Goodbye.
Bye now. Our good friend Gerard from South Bend. That's it. Thank you, everyone, for spending your time with us this evening, this late afternoon, this morning, wherever you are. We do appreciate it. It means so much. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. Is announced by Brian Reznor. The chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the programming on the Horn. Our good friend Shelby Lepre at RadioPower.org is also our streaming partner. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida is our IT professional. Gene is our news editor at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website, which is down for maintenance at the moment, by the way, but you can link into the Horn via the link at BruceBirch.com until further notice. All the programs on the Horn happen every day because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And in building that American dream, they support the Horn, and perhaps, nay, I think they will, save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
In your sorrowing war, life's lies.
Here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. Again, welcome to our new affiliates, and welcome, Truth Seekers, to day two of Malloy After Dark. This is the last time we'll say this, all right? You know, it's not going to be day three and then day four. For those of you who are just finding the program, if you've never heard Liberal Talk Radio before, it'll be okay. I know it's difficult to hear an actual opposing point of view on the radio, but you'll get used to it. We'll be gentle. And I'll say to new listeners what I've always said, you stick with this program for 2 weeks and you're hooked for life. We have some great sound for you today, so I want you to stick around as long as you can possibly stand it tonight. This is Earth Day. Well, kind of, sort of. First of all, April 22nd was never Earth Day. It was the original Earth Day in 1970 was the March equinox, spring equinox. But Earth Day, to celebrate Earth Day in this